Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tomorrow it is the big day, 7 a.m. tomorrow, bright and early. The 13 hours to change the world begins 7 a.m. tomorrow. You have the chance. You have the power. Do you have the will? Will you get out to the polls? Will you cast that ballot? Will you say no to the Romney? Will you say no to the insanity that has been the last 2 years? Get these T-twits out? I sure hope so. And if you look at what's gone on for the last 2 years, you look at here in Pennsylvania, the attempt to suppress, the attempt to intimidate, cheat, lie, steal, do whatever they got to do to hold on to power. It's what we're seeing in this past weekend. It's had all of it, hasn't it? You see news stories across the board, everything they could possibly do, every one of every one of their tricks they can pull out of their bag, every tool out of the box, they have tried. You look at in Pennsylvania, and I love this. Thank you, Mittens. I appreciate the fact that you decided, your campaign decided that, you know, the people who were freezing while they were waiting for hours for you to show up late, that you wouldn't let them leave. Love that. So very happy that you probably lost a number of Republican voters that day. Yeah, because, hey, you know those frostbitten children? Ah, screw them. Probably didn't have health care anyway. Oh, man, and you look at the polls in Ohio and in Florida and the lines. Somebody sent me a picture of where I grew up in Cleveland, and the line was as far as you could see on the picture. Florida, the line 6 hours long, 8 hours long, you know, but hey, you know, those lazy people don't vote. And I looked at the tweet from David Frum today. He said, curiously enough, there's never a line at my polling place in a very affluent northwestern Washington, D.C. And I think about where I live. And, you know, I've thought about this through the years. You know, when I lived in areas where there was higher poverty rates, it seemed that the polls were more crowded. There were less machines. The machines would tend to break down. Do you think there's a correlation there? Because I live in a fairly decent neighborhood. Now I don't wait more than, you know, even in 2008 when, you know, the polls were, I didn't wait more than 5 minutes. I wonder if there's something to that. What do you think? Do you think there's something to the fact that you have someone like John Husted who wanted to cut down on the early voting? Do you think there was something to when J. Kenneth Blackwell, the Secretary of State of Ohio, reallocated the resources and took voting machines from Cuyahoga County, Ohio, and moved it to the southern counties, the predominantly Republican areas? Do you think there was something to that? Do you think in Florida, when Rick Scott reduced the number of early voting days from 14 to 8, had any thoughts of that? Do you think? Because I do. I think this is all by design. Because they don't want you to vote. You know, why is it 13 hours on a Tuesday? That's the day when we decide how our government is going to be run, on a Tuesday. You know, I think about my tomorrow morning. Gonna wake up, polls open at 7. Gonna wake up at 6:30 with the kids, get them ready for school. Gonna make sure they get out the door, gotta get to work. Got to make sure that the kids get fed when they come home, their homework gets done, all of that stuff. And somewhere I'm going to fit in, and you bet I'm going to go fit in to vote. But it makes me ask the question, you know, is Tuesday the best day? I know. That's what they've decided years and years ago. But is it the best way to go about this, especially with today's technology? Should we not be having early voting? Should not everyone be able to vote? Just a thought. So I look at some of the other things that caught my attention this weekend. Out in Arizona, where Jeff Flake is running for Senate, Congressman Flake is running for Senate, evidently sent out robocalls. And I've seen this stuff, and we've talked about it time and time again, so it's nothing new, but it's not, evidently, it's not illegal, which I think it should be. You want to talk about voter fraud? This stuff happens more often than not. They did a whole bunch of robocalls, and, well, gee, they called Democrats and said, hey, you know what? Your polling place is somewhere else. And, of course, these people said, well, wait a second. No, my voter thing says right here, but you're saying somewhere else. How many of those calls went out to people who wrote it down? Said, oh, yeah, hey, maybe. Who knows? And this is why I say when these things happen, you need to hold people accountable. And Flake and his campaign should be held accountable. Because what's frustrating to me on so many levels is in this country where we have gone around the world and we have prided ourselves, and look, there's some pride to be had there, and going around the world and opening up the right to the franchise, opening up democracy and the ability for people to engage in self-rule and self-governance, for us to do the things that I see us doing now, like basically trying to trick people. You had this Kill Mead from Fake News on Fox this morning saying that the best thing that could happen is that poll watchers intimidate people. You know, intimidate them into playing straight. And even the guy who was there, who I think is as crazy as a loon, this Napolitano, but he said, well, wait a second. that's illegal, that whole intimidation thing. No, that's kind of against the law. You don't want to go there. I'll go with you, but not that far. Or, oop, we probably shouldn't have said that. And you look at this, and it comes back to if they can't suppress the vote, if they can't make sure that they can limit the number of people at the polls, they're going to intimidate them. And if they can't do that, they're going to cheat. So you look here in Pennsylvania, the suppression got tossed out for this election, but they keep pushing and pushing and pushing. I just saw one of the big buses coming into work saying, well, you have to show your ID. No, you don't. But they keep pushing that out there because they're hoping to hold down the number of people voting. And they're going to put people at every poll and start harassing people and doing all of the intimidation that the right is famous for. And if they can't do that, then they'll cheat. And if that doesn't work, I guess we're just going to hold the nation hostage like the Romney event in Montgomery County. Kind of makes you scratch your head and go, why would we vote for these people? I mean, in Bucks County. Why would we vote for these people? Because that's what they've done for the last 4 years. If they didn't get their way, they're going to hold us hostage. So I guess, you know, this weekend has kind of been that demonstrative moment, that moment where we go, yeah, it's all right here, right in front of us. This weekend has been just a small taste of what the last couple of years have been. And what you've got is you've got the Romney people who are really in full spin mode. The right is in spin mode because they fear that, well, what they've been talking about for the last 2 years, the American people want or sick of. Because I think most people have gotten to the point that they're tired of the ads. I know over the weekend I see one more Tom Smith ad, and it must be nice to have $17 million just to throw away. I can think of a lot better things to do with $17 million. And you look at all of the money that's been spent on this election, I can think of a hell of a lot better things to do with that money than to enrich some media companies. I can think of a lot better things to do than tear our democracy and our nation apart. I can. You know, maybe education, a little health care. You know, maybe pave that road that I just ruined the front end of my car on. Yeah, just a thought. $1 billion between on the presidential race, just in TV and radio, it's $1 billion. I'd seen somewhere that the election cycle is going to be in the $6 billion range. If we're that broke, do you think we should maybe try and use that money a little more effectively? I don't know. Maybe publicly financed elections are probably a good idea, because then we see who has the right administrative skills, who can encourage volunteers, who can bring people into the process. Just a thought. But I look at the right, who has spent and spent like drunken sailors, like they've done with our nation for the last 30 years. It's not enough, evidently. So you've got people like former governor of Mississippi, Haley Barbour, out there saying, well, you know, hey, Obama might win because, you know, the hurricane. The hurricane broke Romney's momentum because he's wrong on the issue. Again, another issue highlighted where Romney is absolutely dead wrong. I mean, here's a guy who said we shouldn't be funding FEMA. And now the guy who brought us outsourcing, the guy who brought us, let's go to China, accusing the president of shipping jobs to China. we see time and time and time again, this guy is just dead wrong. And I loved his I loved his speech today. And I just want to read his one of his final pearls of wisdom. He said, "Tomorrow we begin a new tomorrow. Tomorrow we begin a better tomorrow. This nation is going to begin to make change for the better tomorrow. Your work is making a difference. The people of the world are watching. The people of America are watching. We can begin a better tomorrow tomorrow. And with the help of the people of Florida, that's exactly what's going to happen tomorrow." Basically, use the word tomorrow out of one out of every seven words. And I like redundancy. And do you know what's going to happen tomorrow? Hopefully we don't hear any more from Mitt Romney. Hopefully Ann is right, and this is the end of it for him and for them. And they go off into their gated communities, and they continue to play in their subterranean garage, and they leave this nation to hell alone. Quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm The Talk.
The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The CEO of Wisconsin-based Right Height sent a letter to employees encouraging them to not vote for the re-election of President Barack Obama. Michael White said there would be personal consequences for employees if Obama is re-elected. White has a history of violating election law. In 2011, White was accused of giving more than the maximum amount allowed under Wisconsin law to the election of Governor Scott Walker. White, who's also received more than $25,000 in stimulus funds from the federal government, gave $15,000 to Walker's campaign. White is now being hit with charges once again after an investigation by concerned citizens discovered White may have contributed under a false alias. Catherine Quinn is one of the complainants in the case.
After the email came to light, we did do some research on him because, you know, it's usually part of a pattern. It's not, you know, a single incident. We did some research on him and his contributions and found this kind of error, if you will.
If White is found guilty, he could find himself losing his right to vote, as felons can't vote in Wisconsin.
You know, I don't know the specifics of what the actual punishment would be. But intentional contribution fraud is a felony charge. And so if he was charged with it, it would be a felony.
Quinn said it's important to remind millionaire CEOs that they aren't above the law.
I think the most important thing about this is that, you know, a lot of these CEOs, these really rich folks, they think that they live above the law. They don't have to follow the same rules that we do. And so we really want to draw attention to that and make sure that elections remain democratic in our state and across the country.
Many people are wondering what organized labor's plan will be after the election, no matter who is elected. On Friday, Workers Independent News asked that question of AFSCME's Lee Saunders.
Well, we're going to try to arrest maybe a day. That's all that we can do. But we're going right into the lame duck session. There's going to be a big battle in Washington, D.C. regarding how we're going to spend our money, how we reduce the deficit, if we're going to raise taxes, or we're going to cut very, very important programs that impact on working families. So we're going to jump right into that. And we're going to be fighting like never before. So our work is never done. We're going to enjoy, and I think it will be a victory. I know it's going to be a victory on November 6th, not only in Washington, D.C., but supporting politicians who should support working families in state and local governments in those elections and state legislatures and governor's races. We're going to have many victories across the country. We'll take a day of rest, but then after that, we're going to be right back on the streets fighting once again, supporting the issues that impact on working families.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
The goal really is to incentivize companies to come here in Pennsylvania, but not put it under pressure of the taxpayers. The companies have to make the investment. The companies have to hire somebody, or they get nothing. Not one red cent gets laid out by the Commonwealth, as it has in past programs. We think this is innovative and different than what other states are doing.
It's been innovative and it's different.
Yes, giving money to corporations, that seems to be different in Mr. Benninghoff's mind. And what's interesting to me is, what is innovative and different is that we find out that it really, the whole 2626 bill that said, you know, hey, companies, you can keep the state income tax that employees think that they're paying to the state. You keep it for yourself. Go ahead. Turns out that $5 million is probably going to go to one company, and surprise, surprise, in that one district represented by Mr. Benninghoff. Very, very innovative and of course, different. Interesting story out of California. I don't know if you saw this. This Arizona-based company, Americans for Responsible Leadership, they have disclosed today that, well, they've engaged in money laundering, about $11 million from pro-Republican groups. And why? Why were they going to take this money from these Republican donors? Well, Prop 30 in California and Prop 32. Prop 30 is the one where they said, you know what, we're going to ask the voters if we should tax the wealthy folks just a little bit more to help fund schools and roads and bridges. Can't have that. And Prop 32 is to basically neuter unions. It's going to ban unions from being able to contribute any money to campaign committees. So, again, two very, very prominent Republican positions laundering money. You got to love the people who laundered money to them, the Center for to Protect Patient Rights and Americans for Job Security. Those are such wonderful names. I love those. Very Orwellian. Anyway, tomorrow, the big day, again, 7 a.m., get out to the polls. You got till 8. Our 13 hours to change the world and, well, change our state. And hopefully tomorrow, folks, in the 15th Senatorial District, will get out and vote for our next guest. Rob Teplitz is running for the 15th Senatorial seat here in Pennsylvania. RobTeplitz.com, the website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Rob, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you, Rick. Really appreciate it.
You know, I look at this, and, you know, this story out of California where you've got this front group, you know, laundering money from a couple other front groups, all to push the very wealthy agenda. And it's, to me, it's the money in politics has just made this whole thing corrosive.
It sounds very familiar. That's why one of my first initiatives is going to be a very comprehensive government reform plan that I've been talking about for the duration of this campaign. We've got to change the way things happen in the Capitol.
You know, and I think what we need to be doing is changing the way elections are run. I mean, I've been watching these ads, and I got to be honest, your opponents run a bunch of ads, and none of them says anything about what he's going to do. Basically, the one just said that you have a pension, which evidently in Republican land is a bad idea.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess he expects people to work for free. He doesn't seem to respect the fact that I've worked my way up over the course of a long career, and he doesn't realize that as a state employee, I have no control over the amount of my salary beyond working hard and rising in the ranks, and certainly have no control over my pension. So it's just a fundamental misunderstanding about how state government actually works.
Yeah, well, the only thing I would probably disagree with you on there is he doesn't believe in you working for free. If I look at what House Bill 2626 did, actually you're going to pay your employer to work.
That's right. That's right. Bribery, I think they call it.
And I guess that's innovative and different in conservative land.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I put out a very detailed jobs plan that involves a different approach from what we've done. Instead of throwing out billions of dollars each year to companies to bribe them to come to Pennsylvania and now pay them for the privilege of working and then give them a ransom to keep them from leaving Pennsylvania, we need to take that money, invest in small business, small local businesses, but also education, tax relief, and infrastructure, and create a climate that will result in job creation here.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, every person, every small business person, most business people that I talk to, you know, the tax breaks, you know, they're nice to put in their pocket, you know, help fund their next vacation, but they want solid infrastructure, location, 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 and they want an educated workforce.
Absolutely. All the tax breaks in the world aren't going to make a difference if the roads and bridges around that business don't work, and if they can't find workers to work there, and if they don't have customers in their area that can afford to buy their products or services.
You know, as you're out knocking on doors, and I'm sure you've spent a whole long days and long nights here recently making sure that every last person gets out to vote, I'm curious how many folks you've run into here recently who still think that the voter suppression law is intact.
You know, we've knocked on about 50,000 doors during the course of this campaign, and I'm very proud of that. We've played a very active role in trying to make sure that the word gets out about the fact you do not need a photo ID, you know, unless you're voting for the first time and the law is already on the books on that. You still don't need a photo ID to do that. You need some form of identification. But there is no photo ID requirement for this election, despite the fact that they're still running ads. Those ads are being produced by one of the supporters who's bankrolling my opponent's campaign, by the way. But even though those ads are still running, even though the buses are driving through the city with big signs on the side that say, show it,
just saw it today.
You do not need a photo ID.
Yeah, I just saw it today. So I guess my next question is you know, once you're elected, once you're sitting in the halls of power, how do we undo the damage they've done over the last 2 years? Because this right now is only for this election where you don't have to show the ID. Next time around, you know, it's a different story. How do we make sure that folks have an expanded opportunity to exercise their right to the franchise instead of seeing it narrowing?
I think that's a great way to put it, and that's all in my government reform plan, making it easier to register to vote, making it easy to cast your vote, no-fault absentee balloting, independent voters being able to vote in open primaries, third-party candidates having an easier time to get on the ballot. Look, I'm not afraid of the consequences of more people voting. I think that's a good thing. And so, you know, if you are of a mindset that you're afraid that more people voting may be a bad thing, then maybe the problem is your ideas and your platform, not the process. And so, you know, fortunately, after the election, we'll have some breathing room until the next election and be able to undo, you know, a lot of what's happened over the last 2 years, but certainly on this disenfranchisement.
Well, there are some folks who, you know, and I go back to Paul Weyrich in 1980, speaking to 20,000 Baptist ministers down in Dallas, Texas. This is what he had to say.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome? Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And that's pretty much been the mantra of the rights from 1980. I mean, this has been the, you know, how can we suppress, hold down? I remember in 2010 when Corbett was asked about his chances, when candidate Corbett was asked, well, if we could just hold that vote down in Philadelphia. This voter suppression law would have done a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, I just find that approach disgraceful. And that's why I've been running a campaign based on ideas. I made a conscious decision very early on. We were going to run a positive campaign based on ideas, detailed plans on great schools, good jobs, low taxes, government reform, addressing the city of Harrisburg's financial problems, and all of the issues that folks are concerned about. And that's why all of the newspapers in the district have endorsed me. That's why we got such a broad coalition of support from labor, teachers, nurses, social workers, the environmental community, folks who care about women's health care, folks who care about animals and the environment. Because I think people are hungry for serious adult discussion and serious recommendations as to how to solve our problem. And so I was willing to bet my campaign on that, and I'm happy and proud that we've done that.
And you're not in favor of a commuter tax? Because the other ad I saw
was
an attack on the commuter tax, and I'm going, well, is that what the other guy's in favor of? I don't know, but so are you in favor of the commuter tax?
Look, no. Nobody wants a commuter tax. And the problem with this issue is my opponent is continuing the approach of the incumbent, which is trying to divide this community between the city and the suburbs. Nobody wants a commuter tax. Nobody wants bankruptcy or a countywide sales tax or any of the other unpleasant alternatives that have been talked about. What I have been talking about and where he purposely took out of context what I've said is it has to be on the table for negotiations.
Right.
That's the same position that the Patriot News editorial board took months ago before they endorsed me. It's the same position that the receiver, General Lynch, takes with regard to bankruptcy. You have to have the leverage to negotiate. My approach is going to be everyone's going to be around a table. City, county, state, nonprofit community, business community, labor, you know, all the stakeholders, the creditors. Everyone's going to be part of the solution. It's going to require sacrifice on everyone's part, but we're going to leave that negotiation with everyone having given a little, not love the final solution, but it's going to be something everyone can live with. And I'm not trying to insert myself as a negotiator on behalf of the city, which is what he's alleging, that I'm fighting for a commuter tax for the city. That's not my position. My position is, I think as the state senator that represents the entire community, city and suburbs, I can play the role as an honest broker and help facilitate the negotiations. That's where our current incumbent senator failed, and my opponent is going to continue that failure and ensure that nothing happens. And just one point, I think it's very ugly to divide the community that way, and it's also false because the people in the suburbs are smart enough to realize that if the city goes down the toilet, it's going to hurt them,
right,
no matter where you live. And so this has been very unfortunate that he's been demagoguing a very serious, complicated issue, running ads that are false, but that's okay. We expected that from him. We've been fighting back. People understand what my real position is, and they're going to show their understanding of that and support it tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is you don't want Harrisburg to go down because it'd be a black eye, not just for the area, but for the entire state.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Credit ratings would go down for the state. It would make it harder to borrow for any municipality anywhere in the state. It would be a huge embarrassment for the state capital of Pennsylvania, one of the largest states in the country. And so we have to solve this problem, but we're not going to solve it if we continue dividing this community. If there's one thing, you know, that I've tried to do in my campaign is show that we need more leadership, we need more dialogue. I've tried to demonstrate that in my campaign and give people a glimpse of the kind of senator that I'll be in bringing people together to solve this and the other challenging problems that we have.
So let me ask you, tomorrow's going to be a busy, busy day. What's on the agenda for tomorrow? I know you have a rally at 1:30 at the Steelworkers Hall there in Steelton. What else is on the agenda?
Yeah, we have the big labor rally at 1:30. I'm really looking forward to that. On the agenda for tomorrow, I'm going to be at my polling place, as I always am, at 7 a.m. when they open. I'll be voting with my family around 9:15. And then I'll work my polling place again for a little while longer. And then I'll spend the rest of the day, other than the rally, just going to the different polling places in the 15th district and greeting voters, thanking our volunteers. And then tomorrow night, we're going to have our victory party, in the city, at the Midtown Scholar Bookstore on 3rd Street, starting at 8:00.
Our good friends there at the Midtown Scholar. We look forward to it. Last question, if folks in your district, in the 15th Senatorial District, need to know where their polling place is, I know it's late, or need help getting to the polls, any suggestions?
Absolutely. Give us a call, 232-6500. We want to help you get to the polls, find your polling place, make sure that you know what you need to do. We want to be able to debunk any myths about voting with all of the confusion going on. So we're here to help. 232-6500.
And we'll make sure we get that up at the RickSmithShow.com. Rob, tomorrow, best of luck to you, and we look forward to having you on the program often as we move along.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it, and I'd be honored to be back as the senator on your program anytime you'd like.
Outstanding. Thanks so much. Rob Teplitz, candidate for the 15th Senatorial District here in Pennsylvania. RobTeplitz.com, the website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
If one thing is certain about this year's elections, it's that working families can't afford to sit on the sidelines. The stakes couldn't be higher for American workers. This election is about how we'll move our country forward. We know that can't happen without strengthening the middle class and making sure the wealthy are paying their fair share. And it can't happen without you. Be a voter. Stand up for candidates who stand up for working families. This message brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
As feared, our People's Democratic Authority has been dogged nearly to death by the hounds of money in this year's election go-round, thanks to the Supreme Court's reckless decree in the Citizens United case. That rank political power play by 5 black-robed partisans unleashed the big dogs of corporate money to bite democracy right in the butt, poisoning our elections with the venom of unlimited special interest cash. But there's also another little-reported consequence of the malevolent Citizens United decision. It has unleashed mad dog corporate bosses to tell employees how to vote. Prior to that 2010 court ruling, top executives were barred by federal law from using corporate funds to instruct, induce, intimidate, or otherwise push workers to support particular candidates. No more. Having been given a legal pass, bosses are openly conscripting employees to be political troopers for corporate-backed candidates. For example, CEO David Siegel of Westgate Resorts, a major peddler of timeshare schemes, warned his 7,000-strong workforce against voting for Obama. To do so, he wrote in a letter to each of them, would, quote, threaten your job. Obama, Siegel declared, planned to raise taxes on multimillionaires like him, which would give him, quote, no choice but to reduce the size of this company. Likewise, Dave Robertson, president of the Koch Brothers industrial empire, notified 30,000 workers that they would suffer assorted ills if they helped re-elect Obama. Robertson even included a slate card of Koch-approved candidates for them to take into the polling booth. Ooh, how helpful! This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, corporate chieftains say they're not making threats, just friendly suggestions on how to vote. Oh, sure. As we know, everyone is equal in the corporate hierarchy, and you're perfectly free to defy the guy who can fire you. Good luck with that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
And I'm proud to say that we are going to support the president, the next president of the United States, by casting 67 votes for Mitt Romney and 5 votes for Paul Ryan.
That's the truth. I can't think of a better line than what we've seen from the Romney camp, from the Republicans. Feed the rich while we take it out on the poor. Absolutely. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm still kind of chuckling over the Romney event where they decided to hold the people hostage. Your kids' hands are freezing, so what? Should have dressed warmer. Wow. You know, if that would have been an Obama event, they'd have who knows what they would have done. I've got George Hartwick on the line, Dauphin County Commissioner, here to talk about tomorrow's big day, 7 a.m., get out the vote. George, thanks for taking time for me.
Rick, anytime. How you doing?
I'm good. So I saw Saturday you guys had a rally with Lincoln Chafee, the governor of Rhode Island. Did you hold anybody hostage there?
No, we did not. And actually, we didn't change our position 4 times when we arrived.
Are you as amazed as I am that this is even a race at this point with all of the, I don't even want to use flip-flopping because it's not even flip-flopping. This is Mitt 360. He's all around every issue.
It's amazing. And I think, Governor Chafee said it best. He said, don't let them fool you. This group has never been in Middletown. They've always been from far right town. Regardless of how much they want to redefine who they are. And it's interesting. If you can look in the camera and look directly at 60 million people and change your story on every different position, what do you think you're going to do when you give no details and you actually have to make decisions and govern? It's scary.
Now, as you're talking to people, because I know you're doing an awful lot of these campaign events and you're out there talking to people, as you're talking to them, do they realize that he is basically circling every issue? Do they realize the thing where he's come out recently about Jeep shipping jobs over to China? Do they get that he's one of the guys who was on the front end of that whole outsourcing movement?
I think that, voters are smarter than we give them credit for sometimes. And I think there's a lot of things at play. We are on our way back. Folks wanted the recovery to happen quicker. And it's interesting that short-term memory loss, just remember where we were 4 short years ago,
yep.
Finding ourselves in a position of not knowing where the American economy was going to be. Banking institutions crumbling around us, housing market completely dropped out, and an economy that had absolutely no prediction as it related to its future, let alone job creation. Now you've got a president who's created 5.3 million jobs. The ability to get the economy back on track, save the auto industry, is really starting to build the middle class from the standpoint of trying to bring back strong manufacturing. We're seeing even 1,000 new jobs at Norfolk Southern here, even in Dauphin County. Those are family sustaining jobs. But I guess the idea that he hasn't fixed it fast enough, even though the net number of jobs that under George Bush was clearly not even close to.
It was a negative.
It was a negative, and I guess we want to revert back to the same policies, and it hasn't worked before. And don't let the voodoo fool you. That's exactly where we're heading, and don't wait until November 7th to wake up and say, I can't believe I didn't show up.
Nice. Don't do the voodoo. I like that.
No, do not do the voodoo that they do.
But, you brought that up, the thing 4 years ago, and I see all around my community, there are signs everywhere. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And I say absolutely,
yes.
Because we were in a free fall 4 years ago.
Not to mention the stock market has almost doubled for all of those who talk about, protecting their assets and trying to make additional money on investments, the capital gains. From all looks that I've seen, that the indicators all seem to be moving in the right direction, even the recent job numbers.
Yeah.
What more do you want? I think it's more the sense of folks, have other ideologies and this idea that somehow Obama now has to still go back and talk about, where he was born and the degrees he has. This guy has proven himself. I mean, the idea that, we're trying to make this into something that it's not rather than focusing on the record. I don't think is going to fool the majority of Americans. And I'm looking forward to making sure we got to show up to vote. Now, the one thing the Democrats are better at, and it clearly needs to happen, is the grassroots of efforts, knocking on doors and ensuring people come out to vote. Because if that doesn't happen, we're in a close election and we won't be in the position on November 7th to be celebrating rather than looking back and saying we should have shown up.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. 7 a.m., the 13 hours where we have an opportunity to change not only this state but the country, take advantage of that.
There's no doubt. And I know there's the importance of voting. We actually had a voter get souls to the polls event 15th and Market Street last night. And I quoted Martin Luther King. He warned that the hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain neutral in times of great moral conflict. And I think that every choice in life either moves you forward and keeps you stuck. Tomorrow is a significant choice for this region, a significant choice for this country, and there should be no reason why you do whatever it takes. Be there early. Make sure that no one turns you away. I have a number for Dauphin County elections. It's important to note that if you are turned away, you do not need an ID tomorrow. I mean, that needs to be very clear. Obviously, you'd want to take an ID with you, but it's not required. unless you are a first-time voter.
Correct.
And so if there's intimidation going on at the polls, I know there's a number of attorneys that are here, but you can also contact the Dauphin County Election Bureau at 780-6323. We have obviously a judge that's going to be there. I have staff members that are going to be there monitoring as well that I'm going to be directly in contact with all day. I even gave my cell phone out at the church. This is that important. So it's very important that if there are questions, we'll get you in touch with legal advice. We want to make sure if you're in line, don't be intimidated. Don't go home. Make sure you do whatever's necessary in order to cast your vote while you're there.
And if anyone is intimidating you, make sure you get it on the phone. Get the smartphone out. Take video. Photograph them, because that's how we make sure that nonsense stops. Also, along with the number that George gave out, 1-866-OUR-VOTE. Is the national line. It gives people the opportunity to speak with legal experts as well. You know, George, I happen to see, vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan basically saying that, you know, a vote for Obama is the end of Western civilization. It's the end of Judeo-Christian values. And I'm going, you know, are they that desperate that, you know, it's the end of civilization?
Well, I mean, the Republican Party has never been the party of substance. I mean, you know, we haven't heard any detail related to the plan how he plans to balance out all the priorities, including the tax cut on the upper 1%. I mean, the details aren't their strong suit. They weren't with George Bush, and they're clearly not with Mitt Romney. They rely on scare tactics. Before, it was, you know, the idea and the threat of war and terror. In this case, you know, they're trying to talk about Christian values and those Christian values being invaded. And clearly, it's not those things are not what brings our country together. And we really need leaders that are talking about exactly what they mean and mean what they say, be direct, be consistent, and not rely on those type of scare tactics. It's not in the best interest of our country to do that, to try to continue to divide us. And it's certainly not going to move our country forward.
So what else are we going to see tomorrow? How's Casey going to fare? We're going to have Bob Casey on the program tomorrow night. I'm curious where you see that going.
I think obviously he's really at late in the game. Although he's, I know, campaigned rigorously. I think the flurry of ads have continued to push the numbers in his favor late. And I happen to believe we will see Bob Casey serve another 6 years in the Senate.
Yeah, I mean, I look at that race, and you know, I'm tired of seeing the ads, but that's what $17 million of your own money will get you, I guess.
Well, and you know, the idea that somehow, you know, a guy just fresh on the scene who is another extremist, another Tea Party right guy, comes now into a position that he happens to be the advocate just for the working guy when, you know, he's never been in that position, never shared that life experience, and certainly is recreating his position even on, and how ironic is this? The idea that, that he's blaming Casey for actually cutting Medicare. Is really ironic, based upon his position on almost ending FEMA, you know, trying to, obviously not, address the significant issues of those benefits, both Social Security and Medicare long term, brand new defined plan. And just because their grandmother accepts it doesn't mean that they're for it.
Yeah, you know, I look at this, and you know, if you knew nothing, and I can't imagine that there are too many people who haven't been following this election, but if you really knew nothing and you watched TV over the weekend, the ads that the Republicans ran would have led you to believe that they were the defenders and the champions of Social Security and Medicare, and it was those evil Democrats who wanted to destroy it. And I'm going, wait, did I fall in the rabbit hole and miss something?
I just think it's the idea that the $716 million was utilized to be able to actually invest in the healthcare plan, the Obamacare plan. They're using that as sort of the impetus to say that they want to cut or reduce Medicare, when that in fact is not the policy plan or initiative of either Barack Obama or Bob Casey. They're actually looking to shore up Medicare, and I think their investments have actually done that through the year 2016. So the idea that they're actually taking money out of Medicare, Republicans aren't concerned about those benefits. They're looking to privatize them. They're looking to voucherize them, and they're looking for the middle class, family and the lower middle class families to be able to pay more, and particularly fixed income seniors, of which this state has the second most of any other state in the entire country. they're going to be paying close to $2,000 in addition to what they have to currently pay for the same or less benefits.
Last line of questioning on the state level. How do you see things shaking out here on the state level?
Well, obviously, talking to me, I'm very biased.
I would have never guessed.
For the statewide officers, I think Kathleen Kane has run a very strong campaign. I think it's a necessary campaign, and one I think that the residents of Pennsylvania look forward to. I think when you see, Governor Corbett, who really had talked about the prosecution of elected officials as the platform by which, ironically, he was thrust himself into the governor's race, now to have a watchdog that's taking a look at issues like Penn State, like the natural gas industry, and addressing issues that are important to people in our urban communities, and making sure that there's an independent watchdog that holds the governor accountable is going to be critical, I think, to the governance over the next 2 years. And that level of a watchdog needs to occur. And I think she's really in a strong position. I saw some recent polling numbers that had her up close to 17 points, which was significant.
And for me, I got to be honest. For me, it's I'd like to see someone take a look at the Hershey board, of which David Freed, the guy who's running her opponent, is the son-in-law of the guy who used to be the chairman of what's going on over there.
Well, obviously, with no ties, the ability to come in. And with a real hungry attitude to make sure that justice is equally applied to both sides of the aisle, I think it will be refreshing to have the first elected Democrat, let alone the first elected female Democrat to serve in that office in its elective history. So I think that's a really, really strong choice. I know it's going to be a little tighter, I guess, in the Eugene DePasquale mayor race. Obviously, Gene and I are great friends. I couldn't find a more sincere advocate for reform, somebody who is open, honest, probably one of the most has some of the most integrity of any of the elected officials in our region. I certainly hope that he can draw from some of his roots in western Pennsylvania, and hopefully the additional turnout of Democrats will assist him in that effort, but I know that that's a really tight race.
Yeah, I'm hoping the best for him. He's always been a good friend of the show, and we wish him the best. Also, I don't see anything in the McCord race. I think he'll be reelected, and that's a good thing. I'm still a little hopeful for the House, but we will see what tomorrow brings. George, it's been great talking with you. I appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much.
All right, go Obama, and make sure that no one misses the opportunity. Get out early tomorrow. Make sure you're there, and don't let any barrier get in the way from you to cast your vote.
Outstanding. Thanks so much, George. George
Howard-Wick,
Dauphin County Commissioner. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
If one thing is certain about this year's elections, it's that working families can't afford to sit on the sidelines. The stakes couldn't be higher for American workers. This election is about how we will move our country forward. We know that can't happen without strengthening the middle class and making sure the wealthy are paying their fair share. And it can't happen without you. Be a voter. Stand up for candidates who stand up for working families. This message brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky.
Today, how reindeer use ultraviolet light to survive harsh conditions in the Arctic.
Reindeer's ability to see into the ultraviolet makes food and predators easier to see in the twilight world of the Arctic There, the sun is often low on the horizon, scattering light into shorter, bluer wavelengths, more toward the ultraviolet end of the spectrum.
Scientists followed a herd of reindeer with UV cameras in order to see what the reindeer saw. The scientists noticed what objects absorbed UV light and darkened against the bluish Arctic landscape. For example, they noticed that fur and urine show up well in ultraviolet light. That makes it easier for the reindeers to see their predators and competitors. Lichen is a favorite food of reindeer, and it also was easy to see in ultraviolet light.
The eyes of humans and almost all other mammals wouldn't let in the same quantity of UV light. That much UV would cause damage to your vision or snow blindness in a human, which is harmful but a reversible condition.
The question remains as to why UV light doesn't harm a reindeer's eyes. If scientists can learn how reindeer protect themselves, it might lead to treatments for UV damage to human eyes. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for the word reindeer. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at earthsky.org. Earth Sky.
John, there's a real difference between venture capitalism and vulture capitalism. The fact of the matter is that he's going to have to face up to this at some time or another.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You know, the big prize tomorrow in the White House, to be honest. I mean, you look at this and, you know, that's what draws people, that's what makes everybody excited. But the reality is these state house races, these state senate races, these are the ones that really affect your life. Your local races, this is the stuff that really matters. I mean, what happens on the national level, it matters. But not doesn't affect your life directly like some of these, like the state house races. And because you look at what they have done in this state the last 2 years since Corbett took office and the Republicans have gained steamroller power. What have they done? Did they create the jobs they said they were going to? Did they invest in education or health care or our infrastructure? Well, no. What they did was, as well, they went after and destroyed unemployment comp. They went after and, well, gave out a whole bunch of money to big corporations. They went and they slashed the general, they eviscerated the general assistance budget, kicked poor working folks off of meager health insurance. You know, real good accomplishments. That's why I'm going to be kind of frustrated, to be honest with you, because I think things are going to stay basically the same politically, which is why after the election we need to stay active and engaged and start forcing people. Some of these less radical Republicans to go, whoa, 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 this radical agenda we've been following, maybe we need to start pushing the John McCain slogan, country first. And when I look today, what's going on? As we speak, that at Sensata Technologies, they've laid off all of the workers there. Going to China. And there's something weird about choosing today, don't you think? That Bain Capital, who owns Sensata, would choose today to lay off all their employees so that tomorrow when they go to the polls and they vote for Obama. And I guess I shouldn't be presumptuous and think that all 170 people who lost their job are going to vote for Obama, but you would go, wait a second, the guy who birthed Bain Capital and who has said not one word about Sensata, I don't know how you could vote for the guy. I don't know how you could vote for Romney, who says he's going to be tough on China, yet the company of his loins, the spawn of his loins, they're leaving this country high and dry. And not because they didn't make money. They made huge profit. In the third quarter of 2012, they made more than $41 million in profit. So they're wildly profitable. In fact, Bain has quadrupled their investment. They have made a nice return, but it's still not enough. And, you know, I listened to Romney who, well, we're going to be tough on China. I'm going to label them. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create 12 million jobs, but, you know, these 170 aren't that important. And, you know, the question that keeps coming up, you know, as CEO of Bain Capital, would he be different as CEO of the U.S.? Because, again, they have this view, like George W. Bush had, that, well, he's going to be the CEO of the country, going to run it like a business, going to be the CEO of the company. Is he going to, how can he be any different? You know, does a leopard change his spots? No. So I find it interesting that not one word. And our media really hasn't asked him the question. No one's held him accountable. I mean, fortunately, someone's, you know, brought it to light that this whole thing with Jeep is a lie. And I think they had to, because it was such a blatant lie. You know, I look at this Sensata thing. And right now the workers are getting screwed. They're fighting for a severance package that, well, you know, if you didn't train your Chinese replacement, evidently you're not going to get the severance package. Get this. Bain Capital flew in Chinese workers. And why'd they fly them in? Well, so that the people that they were replacing could train them. I mean, you want to talk about a slap in the face? And you go and, you know, some of the reports that I read, you know, the guy who's, the person that's replacing them is going to make 90 cents an hour. And you go, 90 cents an hour? That's what we're being forced to compete with? And the answer is yeah. So you can talk tough on China all you want until you're willing to fight for trade policies that are going to protect American workers and protect American jobs and American manufacturing. And if you have to couch it in terms of national security, which I believe manufacturing is, then we have to do that. Because if we can't make the smart chips that make our smart bomb smart, what do we have? If we can't make a tank or a plane, or we can't have control of the technology that we use, what do we have? The question. If we keep allowing these companies to up and leave, and we keep giving them tax breaks to go out the door, if we push for a territorial tax like Romney wants to do, profits don't matter to them because they're profitable everywhere. I'll take a quick break, back with the second hour of the program. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
The CEO of Wisconsin-based Right Height sent a letter to employees encouraging them to not vote for the re-election of President Barack Obama. Michael White said there would be personal consequences for employees if Obama is re-elected. White has a history of violating election law. In 2011, White was accused of giving more than the maximum amount allowed under Wisconsin law to the election of Governor Scott Walker. White, who's also received more than $25,000 in stimulus funds from the federal government, gave $15,000 to Walker's campaign. White is now being hit with charges once again after an investigation by concerned citizens discovered White may have contributed under a false alias. Catherine Quinn is one of the complainants in the case.
So after the email came to light, we did do some research on him because, you know, it's usually part of a pattern. It's not, you know, a single incident. Did some research on him and his contributions and found this kind of error, if you will.
If White is found guilty, he could find himself losing his right to vote, as felons can't vote in Wisconsin.
You know, I don't know the specifics of what the actual punishment would be, but intentional contribution fraud is a felony charge. And so if he was charged, it would be a felony.
Quinn said it's important to remind millionaire CEOs that they aren't above the law.
I think the most important thing about this is that, you know, a lot of these CEOs, these really rich folks, they think that they live above the law. They don't have to follow the same rules that we do. And so we really want to draw attention to that and make sure that elections remain democratic in our state and across the country.
Many people are wondering what organized labor's plan will be after the election, no matter who is elected. On Friday, Workers Independent News asked that question of AFSCME's Lee Saunders.
Well, we're going to try to rest maybe a day. That's all that we can do. But we're going right into the lame duck session. There's going to be a big battle in Washington, D.C. regarding how we're going to spend our money, how we reduce the deficit, if we're going to raise taxes, or we're going to cut very, very important programs that impact on working families. So we're going to jump right into that. And we're going to be fighting like never before. So our work is never done. We're going to enjoy, and I think it will be a victory. I know it's going to be a victory on November 6th, not only in Washington, D.C., but supporting politicians who should support working families in state and local governments in those elections and state legislatures and governor's races. We're going to have many victories across the country. We'll take a day of rest, but then after that, we're going to be right back on the streets fighting once again, supporting the issues that impact on working families.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
We need to cut the waste so we can keep taxes down and make sure we have money for critical programs that help our families and our seniors.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Bloomberg News had an interesting story today. According to a survey conducted by eFinancial Careers, they report that a win by Mitt Romney tomorrow in the big race is more likely to boost Wall Street compensation than if voters reelected President Obama. According to the poll of financial market professionals, they found 57% of them expected the election to change their compensation. 32% said it wouldn't, and 11%, well, they didn't know. Of those who expected to see a bump in their pay, 72% of them said Romney would have a positive effect on their compensation. 18% said Obama would. On the negative side, if Obama was reelected, according to the banksters, they think it would have a negative effect on their income. So let me interpret that. If I get this right, the polling, if I interpret it correctly, and I think I do, what they're saying is Romney in the White House means more for the people who caused all of this economic mess that we've been going through. Greater income inequality, a bigger gulf between, well, the Romney class and those of us who work for a living. And I know. I've heard it before. It wasn't the banksters who destroyed the economy. It wasn't Wall Street. No, it was those teachers and those public sector workers. It was those cops and firefighters. Yeah, them with their pensions. They nearly brought the most powerful economy to its knees. Remember? Yeah, remember that? Yeah, me neither. That's why I've asked Dave Philman, executive director of AFSCME Council 13, to come talk to us about those greedy workers. How dare they want pensions? Dave, thanks for taking time for me.
My pleasure, Rick. In 24 hours, I hope we don't have that Romney scenario playing out. That sounds god-awful.
It does sound awful, but, you know, the thing is you know, the Wall Street folks, they know which side the bread their butter is on.
Yeah, they're and obviously your talk with George Hartwick and the scenarios where we've got these CEOs notifying their employees, you know, if Obama wins, they may lose their job. I mean, some of this rhetoric and these lies, I have never, on my 60 years in this planet, heard any of this kind of talk before an election. I mean, it's just, as I've heard when I was down at the DNC in North Carolina last month, September, they're saying every election is an important election, but they're saying this is one of the scariest elections, especially if that scenario plays out, as he indicated, where Romney becomes president.
Well, you know, I've been saying, you know, for the last couple of months that this is the wealth class seeing the opportunity to be able to seize the power that the robber barons of the past once had. You know, there's this new series out on History Channel. You know, the people who built the nation, you've got the Carnegies and Frick and the J.P. Morgans. Our wealth class of this generation, they want to be those people, and they want that power. And it's really, that's all. They don't want any more money. They want that absolute power.
I saw a couple of those, Rick, and it was actually disgusting at some point, because when they bring in the Homestead Strike with the Pinkertons coming in and just shooting away at the peaceful strikers, I mean, but, you know, you could just fast forward it to here 2012. Maybe some of the violence, maybe some it is not, but some of those same scenarios are playing out right now, where we've got the folks that have the power, they want more of the power, and now they're stepping on the working class to make sure, as we see with the voter ID, with the voter intimidation, they're just trying to buy their way into this thing and stop us from having our rights.
Yeah, buy their way into it. And I look at Tom Smith. There's a guy who doesn't belong. I don't think he belongs anywhere near the political process, but here he's got $17 million. He can buy himself something.
Yeah, and saying that he was a union member, I think I saw a letter from Cecil Roberts from the United Mine Workers Union that said this guy was no union member in any good rights at all. But he plays that up, and I've seen some of the ads, I think, that he's had such a horrible, his mines were so unsafe, and obviously they were non-union, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not a union member. You look at what he did to the people who worked for him, as the ads, as we found out. But, you know, you go back to what you were saying. You know, I think of the Jay Gould quote quite often. I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And this election, all the money that we're seeing being spent on trying to divide us, to me, right there.
Exactly, and you put Citizens United on top of that, where they are just out there like crazy, just spending money and not even hiding it. I mean, we've got all these independent PACs out there that are out there blowing this money, and it's just absolutely incredible what they're trying to do. Exactly what they're trying to do is take our rights away. They're trying to take our rights at the voting booths. They're trying to take our rights away on the workshop floors. They just are insatiable when it comes to grabbing this power. And if they could get the President of the United States, that would be even a bigger prize for them.
Yeah, and you got the guy, who Romney, who said he wants to pursue the no rights at work agenda on a national level, national right to work laws, and which everyone knows is the right to work for basically nothing. But I look in California, and I don't know if you saw the story, you had one of these front groups who just got busted for laundering money from some of these big Republican PACs to fight against Prop 32, which would take unions' ability to donate to political campaigns or committees. And you go, well, are you surprised? And the answer is, I'm not surprised at all.
Not at all. You know, it's out there. That's been their goal. When you put ALEC on top of it, where we had the Scott Walkers of the world that started it off, and Kasich, I mean, it was just laying itself all across those Midwestern states, and it just, and it was proved all along it didn't do anything to stop their or help their budgets or do anything for the economy. It was just to screw the primarily the public sector workers in those areas, and it was just a whole guise to take power away, because once we start taking power away from the organized labor part, it works its way down to the working class, the working poor, where they won't have a voice anymore, and it's going to get even worse and worse as we go.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I see these signs all around my neighborhood, Dave. You know, right next to the Romney signs, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? I see it everywhere, and every time I see somebody who stands next to him, I go, well, yeah, I am better off than the nation's better off than we were 4 years ago. Because if you remember, 4 years ago, the nation was in free fall.
Exactly, and we've got, you know, we look back and obviously in the organized labor, we tend to take for granted what the president has done for us. I remember 3 years ago when he first got in there, obviously did the Lilly Ledbetter legislation to help out, that makes sure that women have an equal right when it comes to pay, when it comes to fighting for their pay. But then not soon after that, he put in that stimulus package, which got badmouthed so badly. But it helped some of the state governments and some of the local governments maintain the services that we are needed, as we just saw this Hurricane Superstorm Sandy come through, that are needed with the FEMA programs, with the help at with the food stamps, all kinds of things. But, you know, it was public sector workers primarily that were there helping out, and that's what government does. I mean, it is in those situations when you have to flick that switch on and you need the help right there in an instant. And I was so proud of all of the helpers. And it was, you know, paramedics, it was police, it was fire, you know, it was all over the place, even volunteers. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But it served a great function, and that's part of the stuff that President Obama sees that is what we need, and yet the Romney team just wants to get rid of it, decimate it, and you're on your own, pal. You lost your house, that's your problem.
Yeah, but, you know, all of this pushed by the right for austerity, we've seen some 700,000 public sector jobs across the nation eviscerated, and which if we had those jobs, the recovery would be much further along. In fact, we'd see a percentage of lower, at least 1% lower unemployment. But I find it interesting, and do you see that there's a disconnect with folks when they look at this? I mean, we've lost 700,000 public sector jobs, yet during Hurricane Sandy and the aftermath, I watched it over the weekend on the football game how, boy, they're putting they're heroes, putting them up on pedestal, but yet all I see are Republicans wanting to destroy them.
Exactly, and you're right. You know, a hero, it was the same thing when 9/11 happened. You know, those were public sector employees primarily that went into those burning buildings when the billionaires were running out screaming. I mean, those are the ones that got killed. But it wasn't months later that they were now, you know, we're bitching about their pensions. They were saying they were so overpaid. Now it happens again. We have another catastrophe on the East Coast. Now they'll be heroes for a day or two, and then they'll go back to bad-mouthing them and trying to take their benefits away from them, but hoping the next time they'll be there to do everything that they necessarily do, and they will. You know, they get slapped around, the public sector, the teachers, the police, the firefighters, they get slapped around, they get knocked down, they get their pays frozen, reduced, their benefits, their pensions reduced, but they still hang in there because it's what they are. My members are just like that. It's part of their lifestyle. It's part of what's inside of them. They do this not for the money and the benefits, but for the helping the taxpayers out there.
You know, Dave, I keep asking the question. You know, if this is how we treat people that we consider heroes, who are going to be the next heroes to step forward? I mean, you like you pointed out, 9/11. You look at what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, and all of these people that you see the photo ops with, yet. We're not funding care for PTSD at levels that I think we should. We sure took our good old sweet time helping the folks with breathing problems and all of the problems after 9/11. I guess that the question is, you know, if this is how we treat heroes, who's going to want that title?
Exactly right. And you're right. We got the veterans coming back, and we couldn't even get the Republican Congress to pass a jobs bill for them. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. That they would even take upon them. And, you know, they don't get paid a lot of money either, for God's sake. I mean, they're helping us. They're saving us. They're protecting us here on our shores, across the seas. But when they come home, you know, how many homeless veterans do we have out there? Tons and tons of them. And no one's really picking up a hand to help them.
Yeah. Let's talk about Obamacare, because, you know, Romney tells me the day he's elected, you know, when he takes office, that first day he's going to repeal it all by himself. Congress be damned. He's going to CEO, executive order, whatever. He's going to repeal it. I think Obamacare is a step in the right direction. We should be protecting it and strengthening it, not letting folks destroy it. How's it going to help us?
You know, I tell you, you're absolutely right. I mean, here we have Obamacare. We've got, you know, the college kids or any kid that's 26 years old, a young man or woman, 26 years old, still without a job, on their parents' hospitalization, pre-existing conditions, all the benefits, the preventive care, all that stuff that's there with the help with the Medicare. But we're hearing from the far right is this $750 billion that Obama's taking out of Medicare, which he's explained over and over again, was just saving the money that's been wasted in some of the hospitalization procedures that he's been doing. But they don't come up with anything that's going to replace it. That's right. He talks about getting rid of it. And they say, well, there's some things that are okay, but they don't say exactly what they're going to do.
I think they have, Dave. If you watch the primary debates, I think it was quite obvious what their plan is. Their plan is quite simply pay or die.
Exactly right. Or the one that they keep, this time-worn piece, is, well, let's let the hospitalization carriers cross state lines and bid into it. Well, let me tell you, Rick. Pennsylvania, we've got four Blue Cross networks, and, you know, you don't have to go across state lines. We've got four different ones here, and it doesn't do anything. So making it a competitive thing, especially in the medicine business, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, because
you've got to do what President Obama is doing, is grab the whole thing and get everybody in covered by it, and then you start bringing costs down.
Yeah, but you know, didn't you know? I mean, when you have your heart attack, you're going to be speed dialing the different hospitals looking for the best deal. You're going to be clipping coupons for a broken leg. Come on, you know that.
Exactly right. I mean, and that's it. You know, they still don't admit that the biggest form of personal bankruptcy in America still is a hospital bill. That continues on. We've got people uncovered to go to the emergency rooms. We've got to change things around, and they have no plan to do that. Just get rid of Obamacare. That's all they want to do.
Yeah, well, and take us back to pay or die. Last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, on the state level, you know, we've talked about Obama, and I think Obama's going to be okay. I think he's going to be okay. I think Casey will be fine. What I'm worried about is the state level. Because I see those same attacks on workers. I see those attacks on pensions and workmen's compensation. I see all these attacks coming next January. And I'm concerned, and I know the working people in this state are concerned. You know, how do you see the state house going in this election? And in the aftermath, if things stay kind of the same, what's the path that we take to defend workers' rights and to defend workers' comp and pensions for workers here in the state?
Well, I think two areas. The state house, I don't think it's going to change, to a Democrat majority. It would be the greatest thing, but the numbers may not do that right now. We're hoping from labor side, we do have a very good caucus on moderate Republicans that have been helping us in some of the bad, awful. Legislation has been coming from the far right side. So if we can keep those numbers closer to the moderate side, if we could do a Democrat majority, that'd be great. I don't think it's going to happen. On the Senate side, we may. I'm not sure if we'll be able to pull that off. We may, but we have good race right here in central Pennsylvania with Tiplets, and then up in Erie area, it's called Sean Wiley, two Senate seats that look very promising. So I'm hoping that we can do both houses, but if not, we may get it tighter so some of the craziness doesn't come around.
Yeah, because I look at this pension issue, and I sat in on the hearings that Metcalf and his clan had, and what they told me is that, well, their solution isn't going to make the situation any better. In fact, it's going to cost more. But ideologically, moving from a defined benefit plan to a defined contribution was ideologically the right thing to do.
Well, yeah, it makes them feel good. You're right. It doesn't. Even the guys from the Commonwealth Foundation are saying it's not going to fix it, but it's something we got to do, which is stupid as heck. So my concern is there seems to be whispering about challenging the legality of it under the state constitution. We're ready for that battle. We're hoping we don't have to go there.
Yeah, I'm with you. Dave, it's always great talking with you. I look forward to having you back again after the election.
Thanks, Rick. See ya.
Thanks so much, Dave Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. Quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Mr. Pep and Dig it, Mr. Hardigan Holler, cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground. Mr. Tap and Dig it, Mr. Hardigan Holler, Mr. Reagan can supervise the crew. And if they find it too hard, they got the National Guard to fix the bayonets and shovel like fools. He's gonna take a lot of long and an 80 short day for this miner to cool on down. Mr. Tap can dig it, Mr. Hardy can haul it, cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
As feared, our People's Democratic Authority has been dogged nearly to death by the hounds of money in this year's election go-round, thanks to the Supreme Court's reckless decree in the Citizens United case. That rank political power play by five black-robed partisans unleashed the big dogs of corporate money to bite democracy right in the butt, poisoning our elections with the venom of unlimited special interest cash. But there's also another little reported consequence of the malevolent Citizens United decision. it has unleashed mad dog corporate bosses to tell employees how to vote. Prior to that 2010 court ruling, top executives were barred by federal law from using corporate funds to instruct, induce, intimidate, or otherwise push workers to support particular candidates. No more. Having been given a legal pass, bosses are openly conscripting employees to be political troopers for corporate-backed candidates. For example, CEO David Siegel of Westgate Resorts, a major peddler of timeshare schemes, warned his 7,000-strong workforce against voting for Obama. To do so, he wrote in a letter to each of them, would, quote, threaten your job. Obama, Siegel declared, planned to raise taxes on multimillionaires like him, which would give him, quote, no choice but to reduce the size of this company. Likewise, Dave Robertson, president of the Koch Brothers industrial empire, notified 30,000 workers that they would suffer assorted ills if they helped re-elect Obama. Robertson even included a slate card of Koch-approved candidates for them to take into the polling booth. Ooh, how helpful! This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, corporate chieftains say they're not making threats, just friendly suggestions on how to vote. Oh, sure. As we know, everyone is equal in the corporate hierarchy, and you're perfectly free to defy the guy who can fire you. Good luck with that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show. Welcome to the new dark ages.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can give me a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Of course, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. New York Times had an interesting story yesterday. According to them, the suicide rate in the U.S. rose sharply during the first few years since the start of the recession, according to The Lancet, that's a medical journal. The researchers found that between 2008 and 2010, the suicide rate increased four times faster than it did the 8 years prior to the recession. The rate had been increasing by an average of 0.12 deaths per 100,000 from 99 to 2007, and in 2008, the rate began increasing by an average of more than a half, more than 0.5 deaths per 100,000. Without the increase in the rate, the U.S. The total deaths from suicide each year in the U.S. would have been lower by about 1,500 per year, according to the studies. And you look at a lot of these studies in the U.K., a lot of the studies by the Center for Disease Control that link high unemployment to suicide. You know, you get people who, you know, they get to the end of the rope, losing the house, losing, you know, everything, and that's it. And a lot of studies that I've read, especially from the UK, we don't really track that kind of stuff here. But, you know, suicide rates going up during conservative rule or when conservative policies are being pursued, austerity, if you will. And, you know, I look at what the last couple of years have brought us. Gridlock. Obstruction, delay, no real push for full employment. And I go back and I think of the stimulus package that Dave Filman was talking about. And while it was a step in the right direction, again, I think it was Obama reaching out and saying, you know, I want to be bipartisan and bought into the old, hey, because understand, of the Recovery Act, 45% of it was tax cuts. And you know, the CBO has said, you know, or the Congressional Research Service says, you know what, tax cuts don't work. It just leads to more inequality. And what we already know. So the policies that Romney and Ryan are pitching are the same failed policies that have gotten us into this mess. And worse yet, creating an environment where folks who are struggling mightily. And for a long time, I know somebody, I just met up with a guy that I talked to a couple of years ago. And, you know, back 2 years ago, he had been unemployed for 2 years. He's still unemployed. you know, he's had a job here, you know, spatterings of work, but nothing full-time, nothing. And to me, I look at this, and I've gotten to the point to where I truly believe it's come down to two things. It's come down to one, you have the Republicans in Congress who will not allow any government action whatsoever. And we know that regardless of what Romney says, government does create jobs because it does stimulate demand. Because we know what? We need construction workers to build roads and bridges, and we need teachers to educate our children. We need cops and firefighters to do the things that heroes do that we love to put them up on pedestals for. We need that investment. But what you've seen time and time again is the Republicans, well, look here in Pennsylvania. There was a transportation study done over a year ago, and it's been collecting dust ever since. There's been nothing done. And I know Tom Corbett says, well, it didn't take us, it wasn't overnight that we got here, and we're not going to fix it overnight, so maybe next term. That doesn't put people back to work. And I look at this study, and I'm not surprised by this, by these numbers. Not surprised at all. And I'm not saying that this is what conservatives want. It's just, it's their ideology. And this whole, you know, hey, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstrap, this whole rugged individualism thing. And the way that the right has really demonized folks who are struggling. I mean, you listen to Gingrich during the primary talking about the food stamp president. Like somehow needing help to feed your family was a bad thing. I begrudge no one. No one who needs help to feed their family. No one. You know who I begrudge? The person who we gave our entire surplus to. That top 1%. Who didn't need it. And haven't done what they said they were going to do with it. And I go back and I look at this time from the end of the Great Recession. And I go back to the study done by Emmanuel Saez that said, you know what, 93% of all the new income gains, 93% went to the top 1%. So there was a recovery that happened. There was wealth that was created. There was prosperity, as Mitt Romney loves to say. But unlike what Romney says, it wasn't for all. It was for the 1%. And I know you hear a lot about, wow, you know, it's the 1%. It's because they're the ones who are benefiting wildly. They're the ones who the policy is aimed at, because that's where the campaign money comes from. This whole incestuous relationship has to be destroyed for the money from the start. That unholy decision, if you will, that Citizens United has to be undone, and has to be done immediately. And I look at this thing in California where $11 million just showed up. Two groups gave this one front group $11 million to try and convince California voters not to raise taxes on the wealthy and not to let those evil unions be able to participate in democracy. I mean, really? And are we surprised? And the answer is no. What's surprising to me is that we, the people, haven't figured this out yet. And I'm hoping that we do. Because, again, I go back to my grandfather who said, you know, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you need something or you don't, you better spend two to go the other way. And we had better start looking at who are these attack ads coming from. Instead of just buying, oh, well, I guess so-and-so's a no-good-for-nothing, ask who's paying for that ad. And who's behind these wonderful names? Oh, Americans for Puppy Chow. Or Americans for Puppies. Or Americans for Kitties. They're playing us for dupes. Sad stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
For and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
One thing is certain about this year's elections. It's that working families can't afford to sit on the sidelines. The stakes couldn't be higher for American workers. This election is about how we'll move our country forward. We know that can't happen without strengthening the middle class and making sure the wealthy are paying their fair share. And it can't happen without you. Be a voter. Stand up for candidates who stand up for working families. This message brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you have experienced any of the following symptoms: crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
I'm passionate about our economic liberty because I have witnessed our free enterprise system as it rewards the hard work of many and creates prosperity for all in this great country. And over the past few weeks, we've seen a frontal assault on free enterprise.
Once I made you rich enough to forgive my name, in Youngstown, in Youngstown.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So another one of these CEOs, these corporate titans who have put out the directive to their employees, how dare you think of voting for yourself? If you vote for the wrong guy, says Cliff Otto, well, it could mean your job. And you go and you look at, since Romney gave his little speech to the NFIB saying, hey, go tell your employees, vote for me or they could lose their job. Well, we've seen a bunch of these guys going around. The Koch brothers, the guy from ASG. I mean, threats and intimidation, it's what they do. I've got President Jim Hoffa on the line of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. He's in Ohio for the big push till tomorrow's election. James, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I am good. You know, I look at a lot of these CEOs putting out emails, putting out letters to their employees saying, you know, if you vote for that black guy in the White House, you could lose your job.
You know, Rick, I don't remember that even happening in the last election in 08. That's pretty far out. You know, that's just typical of, you know, what we're dealing with here. I mean, this candidacy is so far out. You got this multimillionaire that doesn't pay taxes, that won't show us his tax returns. And he's telling us how he's going to put America back to work. And then he also tells all the CEOs to tell their people to vote for him or they're going to lose their jobs. I mean, it doesn't sound like democracy to me. What the hell's going on here?
Well, it sounds good.
I just think that this is, you know, the whole campaign, this campaign is becoming so desperate right now.
Yep.
This idea here, I just went through Toledo this morning, that they're going to outsource Jeeps to China. You know, that's been denied by the CEO of Chrysler. And you know what? He won't take the ad down. He still keeps talking about it.
Yeah, even the governor of Ohio has refuted it and said, look, Jeep is one of the places that's actually creating jobs.
It's a great story, and they put thousands of people to work here in Ohio. You know, the bailout is a big success here. 1 in 8 jobs in Ohio is related to the auto industry. So it's a success here. People are back to work. It's ticking up, got a better economy than most states, even New York and New Jersey. And yet this guy keeps on pouring water on it.
Well,
so I think it's clear right now that Obama's going to win, and Romney's just absolutely desperate.
Yeah, but, you know, don't you think this is one of those moments, a very Rovian moment, where your weakness you're going to project? I mean, because Romney, if you go back, you look at the Delphi story, you look at he was one of the guys who pushed those Delphi jobs to China. He was one of the first guys to start that pipeline to China, yet here he is accusing the president of what he has done for years.
Well, he basically said that he went to China and he saw 20 people sleeping in a room together. He thought that was good. You know, he thinks that we should have the Chinese model here where people, you know, work for, you know, basically peasant wages He said, that makes us competitive. Well, that's not America that I know, and that's not America that Americans want. So no one is buying his message of tax cuts for the rich, getting rid of capital gains tax, getting rid of the inheritance tax, and that's all for rich people. That's not going to create jobs. What we need is Barack Obama, who's going to go out and have a plan to keep taxes low for the middle class, raise taxes on the rich. Hey, the rich guys aren't even going to miss it. Yeah. And this can help balance the budget.
Well, let me ask you this, President Hoffa. You know, for me, this Jeep thing is a teachable moment. Because what the Chinese have mandated, what they've said, if you want to sell things in our country, you have to build them here. Isn't this an opportunity for us to say, you know what, we need to have domestic manufacturing. We need to mandate that if, I don't care what company, what country you're from, but if you're going to sell product in the U.S., it should be made here?
Well, I agree. We should have a much tougher trade policy, but unfortunately, even Obama doesn't go that far. If I had my way, every time they put a tariff on us, I'd put a tariff on them. They have tariffs on our car. You make an American car, like a Jeep or a Cadillac, and you try and sell it there, they put a huge tariff on it so you can't sell it there. When you go to China, I was in China a couple years ago, you see all these cars that look like American cars, guess what?
Yeah.
100% were made there.
Yeah.
Well, that's not an export at all.
And that's where I think that this teachable moment should happen. I mean, we should be talking about how we encourage manufacturing in this country, because I think manufacturing is a national security issue. If we can't make tanks and bombs and planes, we can't have a war machine.
Well, I agree with you, and it's exactly what the Teamsters believe, and we preach that to Congress right now to keep our basic industries. And, you know, we're very fortunate that we were able to keep our auto industries open today. Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors are making record amount of cars. They're making the best cars in the world, and we should all be proud of that. And they're making them for the domestic market, and they're exporting them. But as far as imports, you know, all those cars that come in here, a lot of these companies like Honda and Toyota, they built plants here
right.
to get around that, and I guess that's okay. But I'm glad that I hate people that send cars in here and don't let us send cars there. And, you know, China and Japan are a lot like that. They are very strong on keeping our exports out, but they want to have access to our markets. You know, to some extent,
that's smart.
President Obama is talking about this. He says he has a bill bringing the American, bringing jobs home and basically building the economy. He wants to give, tax breaks to people that build a plant here, to keep a plant here, and if you export or build a plant and close a plant and move it to China or move it to India, he's going to put a tax on you. That makes sense to me, and maybe that will help keep jobs here in America.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, President Hoffa. But, you know, as you're out talking to folks in Ohio, one of the things that's been on my mind is this whole, Romney saying, well, Obama did exactly what he would have done with the auto rescue. And I completely disagree. You know, this idea that he would run it through bankruptcy, as Romney has done with company after company. This idea, if you buy it, that there was private money out there, which expert after expert says there wasn't. The fact that what Romney really wanted to do was to destroy those workers' pensions, to take away those retirees' health care, to do away with all that legacy cost, as he's done to workers for the last 20 years.
Well, that's exactly right. He's really, he looks terrible on this idea, because he wrote that editorial in the New York Times that said, let Detroit go bankrupt. Well, when you write an article like that, you're saying, let Ohio go bankrupt. And when he meant bankrupt, he meant bankrupt. He meant gone, no new money, plants are disassembled, parts go to Korea, parts go to Japan, parts of the plant end up in China. That's what he was talking about. And the answer is there's another type of bankruptcy where it goes through bankruptcy and there's money there, this time provided by the federal government. We rebuild the plants, we make adjustments, and guess what? We came out the other end in 2 years. Now we've got record production. We've got 3 ships working at places here in Ohio and Michigan. Thousands of people are back to work. And it's not only the big three, it's all of the auto supply companies. And, with the Teamsters haul the cars, I'm down here in Ohio. Guess what I see? I see Teamster car haulers hauling cars everywhere. And they're American cars. That's a great story.
That is a great story. You're in Ohio over the weekend. The lines, the reports that I've seen, line 6-10 hours long. You've got a Secretary of State there who's doing everything it appears that he can do to make those lines longer and to deny people the right to vote. What are you seeing on the ground?
Well, we're going to go by a couple of the polling places, but, right now, a lot of people, I just left the plant where we had 50 people. I said, raise your your hand if you voted. And I was a little disappointed because only about, I would say 20% had voted. So I said, you guys got a lot of work to do. You got to vote.
Yep.
So we've got those people there, and hopefully they'll get out. They're going to get off work at 3 o'clock. That's plenty of time to vote. Gives them 5 hours to vote. I'm here. The lines aren't that bad here. It probably varies where you're at. I'm in Cleveland right now, and I'm going to go check a couple lines. But I'm not here. I'm hearing a little bit of that, but not like Florida or anything like that.
Right. Let me ask you, after this election, I mean, because come Wednesday morning when we wake up and we realize, I'm hoping the Senate stays with the Democrats. It looks like the Republicans are going to maintain the House, and I'm hoping Obama maintains the White House. Where do we go from there? I mean, what's the push? How do we get this gridlock broken? Because if things stay as they are we going to have another 2 or another 4 years of what we've had the last 2 years?
Well, I mean, that's the question everybody's asking. The answer is, when he wins, are the Republicans going to say, okay, he beat us fair and square, now let's start running the country? And I got some bad news for you. I would like to tell you that they're going to be reasonable. They're going to come down and say, you know, you guys are right. Maybe we were wrong. We really got to do the people's work to make sure we have a strong America. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to keep moving to the right. Tax cuts for the rich. They want to get rid of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Pell Grants, you name it. They want to get rid of it. That's their message, and they're sticking with it. And unfortunately, it's going to get worse after the election until it gets better. We have this thing about the fiscal cliff that comes up January 1, and that is going to be the war of all wars, because one way is they can kick the can down the line, and I don't think the president's going to do that. I think the president's going to say, I didn't fight this hard, all the bad things that they said about him. I think that he's fighting mad, and he's going to say, you know, there's only one way to go, and we've got a plan here. We're going to raise the taxes on the rich. We're going to keep the tax cuts for the 98%, and we're going to keep our safety net, and we're going to have a great America. That's going to be the battle, and we're going to see who blinks first.
Yeah, and to me, what has to happen is all the organizing that you have done, all the organizing that labor has done for this election has to continue. I mean, once in the past, what we've seen is you have this big ramp up, and then the election's over, and everybody goes back to what they were doing. The hope is that this continues on to Wednesday, Thursday, and into next year, and we keep the pressure on and keep pushing.
Well, I think you're right, but a lot of the things that's interesting here in Ohio is they had that tremendous battle with the John Kasich when he tried to take away collective bargaining for the public employees, including firemen and policemen.
We were there.
And they basically gave us a nucleus here in Ohio. And basically it was the fight of SB 5. We have actually, it's called a citizen's veto. We got over 1 million petitions. We put it on the ballot. We had an election, and we basically turned it back. And that was a tremendous victory. So we're using that, basically that affiliation of all the unions and all the public employees that were part of that movement have coalesced into the movement right now to elect Barack Obama. And that's why the movement here, I think, is strong, because we, like you said, the momentum from SB 5 is playing out. We see it active here. And then from here, it's going to have effects on Ohio, you know, for the next election. Because the two big issues here, John Kasich wants to sell the turnpike, and no one wants that because we've got over 1,200 good union jobs on there, and he wants to sell it to, you know, foreigners. And then the second thing is Kasich has got to go. So the nucleus that we have here coming out of SB 5 is something that keeps paying dividends and will pay dividends in the future.
Yeah, and the hope is that bleeds its way into Pennsylvania. We get rid of our governor in 2 years and begin to take back our section of the House.
That's actually right. Pennsylvania is a tremendously important state. Everybody says that we're in good shape in Pennsylvania. I hope so. And I thought it was funny that Romney went back there, and he's got somebody put in $4 or $5 million back into the campaign there. If you remember, a few months ago, he had written off that state. And then now he's trying to come back in. I think it's too late.
No, I think it's too late as well. But if you've looked at Tom Smith, the guy who's running against Casey, he was down 20 points over the summer, spent about $17 million of his own money, and he's kind of eked his way back within 5 or 10 at this point. So it'll be interesting to see what tomorrow brings us.
Yeah, that's disturbing. Casey's a good man, and he works with us, and he cares about working people. So I think we make sure that we keep Bob Casey as a senator in Pennsylvania.
Any final words for our Teamster listeners?
Get out and vote.
There you
That's
go.
The main thing. I mean, we got to vote. You know, the old story, they got the money. They got the billionaires and the millionaires. We got the boots on the ground, but it's no good if we don't vote. Get out and vote. Exercise your democratic principles, and we will be victorious at the end of tomorrow.
All righty. President Hoff, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight there.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone and after out of home. Riders on the storm.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
If one thing is certain about this year's elections, it's that working families can't afford to sit on the sidelines. The stakes couldn't be higher for American workers. This election is about how we will move our country forward. We know that can't happen without strengthening the middle class and making sure the wealthy are paying their fair share. And it can't happen without you. Be a voter. Stand up for candidates who stand up for working families. This message brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Earth. Sky.
Today, how reindeer use ultraviolet light to survive harsh conditions in the Arctic.
Reindeer's ability to see into the ultraviolet makes food and predators easier to see in the twilight world of the Arctic. There, the sun
is that old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service. 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
We took a concerted effort to go out and find women who had backgrounds that could be qualified to become members of our cabinet. I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
I like that song. Binders full of women. Yes, that'll be something that lives on well after this election is over. Yes, binders. One of those moments that you almost as good as the Rick Perry moment. Almost. You know, and you got to give him credit. You got to love some of those moments. Although my favorite, I think one of my favorites was the Rick Santorum one, where he was defining marriage.
Marriage is what marriage is. Marriage existed before there was a government. It's like, you know, handing up this and saying, this glass of water is a glass of beer. Well, you can call it a glass of beer, but it's not a glass of beer. It's a glass of water. And water is what water is. Marriage is what marriage is.
There you go. Just like a glass of water. I'm telling you, I miss the primaries. And I can't wait till Wednesday, because Wednesday, I do think, is going to begin the race for 2016. Should be very interesting. Let's go to the phones. Got Andy on line one. How are we doing tonight, Andy?
Fine, Rick. How about yourself?
Oh, I cannot complain.
Ready for the big day tomorrow, huh?
I'm ready for it, and I'm also going to be kind of relieved when it's over, especially if it goes the right way.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm getting pretty burnt out.
I mean, because they don't seem to ever run out of money and negative hate ads. I mean, that's what's gotten it for me. I listen to some of this stuff, and I'm going, do you people have nothing good to say?
Well, you're probably getting barraged now because he's doing that counterattack back in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, well, the reason that Romney's spending money in Pennsylvania is because there's nowhere else he can spend it. I mean, really, the whole idea is you got all this money, we need to spend it, and then project like we're being competitive. Pennsylvania is not a competitive state for him. He was done early. In fact, they're right just around the block from where our studio is the Romney headquarters. They rented out the top floor, the second floor of this whole second floor of this building, and put signs in all those. But there's no one there. There hasn't been anyone there all summer.
Yeah, I remember even the last time we called, I mentioned and you had confirmed that they'd given up on Pennsylvania, but now he's trying again. I think it's because, you were just talking about the Casey race. I think he sees that is become more competitive, so he feels maybe he could pull something off here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what tomorrow brings us. I'm hoping that it's a definitive election, that it's over by midnight. That by the time we leave here tomorrow night, we know. I really don't think a very long protracted fight, definitely not a 2000 scenario, that just not good for the country.
Right. So Dauphin County didn't get hit too bad by the storm, did it?
Fortunately not. I mean, fairly unscathed. I know at my house, I live out in Carlisle, the lights flickered a couple of times, but we got away fairly unscathed. Yeah, some aluminum siding blew off. A couple of trees came down. But, nothing horrific.
Right. Yeah, my relatives in New Jersey took a beating.
Yeah, I mean, they were right in the middle of it, man.
Oh, man. I have an aunt that I used to go visit. She had a home in between the Atlantic Ocean and the Navasink River. And my brother was talking to my cousin today. They finally let him in there to see the house.
I can't imagine.
He was happy to find that it was still mostly there.
Mostly.
I'm surprised too. Yeah, they said the whole bottom floor was full of water.
But structurally, it was still there, then.
Right, and that's surprising because they had one storm that basically almost blew the whole thing off the foundation in the past. So this actually came out better than it did from a couple years ago.
Wow.
Maybe 10 years ago, it got knocked right off the foundation because it's in a real bad. It's primo. You're the next step. You just cross the road and you're in the ocean, basically. So if a place is going to get hit, that'd be it. But it does have a huge stone structure built up to try to protect it. So I guess they did a pretty decent job.
Yeah, well, I hope the best for them. I hope they're okay. I hope they're safe. Some of the reports we've seen, not so good.
Yeah, my aunt actually spends most of her time in Pennsylvania, believe it or not, near probably where you used to live, near the Hazleton area. She's got another property there. So she evacuated to up there, so that was good.
She wasn't
down there. But I'll have to talk to my cousin. Ask him what he saw this weekend when they finally let him in.
Yeah, I mean, something's going to have to be done. We're going to see more of this stuff every time you turn around. We've got some huge storm coming up.
I wrote an editorial a few years ago when I used to live in that area to the Asbury Park Press because they did a piece that was totally denying climate change. Total denial. It was a piece copied directly from that group, the Heartland group right out of Chicago.
The Heartland Institute,
piece
yep.
of garbage. They hammered Al Gore in the piece. And, we're totally against all the evidence, the mountain of evidence that's out there that climate change is happening. And here you go. What more do you guys want? You got it.
Wow.
The damn $50 billion worth of damage. Jesus.
Yeah, well, the question then becomes, what do we rebuild out of this? I mean, they're talking, $50 billion now up to, of what it's going to cost to rebuild and to redo all this. How do you do that? What's the most efficient way? What's the best way to make sure that we're going to be okay moving forwards so that you're not rebuilding every 5 or 10 years?
Right, like I tell my brother, it's only going to get worse. You got to do something. You got to move, maybe pay those people and move those homes further inland. It ain't going to happen close to the shore. Just going to happen again.
Yeah.
Hey, you were talking about the money, man. I've been kind of it's a bummer working on this Prop 37. I was telling Brett. That's the one with the GMO labeling.
Yep.
We started out, we had 90% yes on that, and it went to 64. Now the last poll I saw was only 39%. You know, they're spending over $40 million.
I saw $45 million from Monsanto, DuPont, PepsiCo, Nestle, and a number of other of these big food companies.
Right. Bayer, Schmucker's, Dean Foods, to name a few.
Yeah, $45 million, and you go...
They even advertised during the World Series, Rick. They had, I think I counted six World Series commercials against us. Amazing.
You know, I saw something that said it was 90% of all the American-grown corn and soybean are now genetically modified.
If it doesn't say organic, it's a good chance it's GMO. And so last week we went in front of Yahoo. We tried to get Marissa Meyer, who's now on the board of she's the CEO of Yahoo, and we got 60-70 people out there in front. We did. We got the UFCW there, United.
Right, food and commercial workers.
Yeah, right. Had a representative from there. We're trying to get Marissa Meyer, who's on the board of Walmart now, and she's CEO of Yahoo, to convince Walmart to let people know they're selling GMO corn. They're selling one of the new Monsanto breeds of...
Nice.
Who knows what kind of horror you're getting. And I did some work over the weekend at a farmer's market. You know, real receptive people, good demographic to try to get the word out, handing out flyers. Did at a Stanford football game outside the game. Was at a mall yesterday.
At the end of the day, if you have the resources to be able to explain, you know, local produce and local production is the smart way to go about it, and all this consolidation only leads to more illness and more opportunities for meningitis, the meningitis type thing to happen.
There's no doubt. An individual in France from, I think, Cannes University came out with they haven't done any long-term studies, but the one he did showed that he did find that there were tumors, there was kidney disease, there was other stomach ailments.
Yeah, but it's good for profits.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's good for profits, too. Disaster capitalism sells, Andy. I mean, lots of money. Your misery is somebody else's profit.
Well, the drug companies make out like bandits. No doubt about it. The healthcare companies, again, they love people being sick because they make money off of illness. They don't make money off you when you're healthy.
Nope, and that's why the Republicans are fighting against Obamacare.
Yeah, that'll
be as much as I have a problem with it, and as much as we need to improve on it and fix what's wrong with it, it's still a step towards the right direction.
Yeah, priority number one by Mr. Mitt Romney, get rid of Obama, the Affordable Care Act, priority number one.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm hoping tomorrow this is the last we hear from Romney for a while, because Ann said no more. Andy, I got to take a break right here. I appreciate the call.
All right, Rick. Have a great one.
It's
keep
always,
up the great work.
Thanks so much. Great talking with you. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with the third hour of the program. Stick around. Of course, if you missed any portion of the first two, ricksmithshow.com or Stitcher. Right back.
Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the world.
We're smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The CEO of Wisconsin-based Right Height sent a letter to employees encouraging them to not vote for the re-election of President Barack Obama. Michael White said there would be personal consequences for employees if Obama is re-elected. White has a history of violating election law. In 2011, White was accused of giving more than the maximum amount allowed under Wisconsin law to the election of Governor Scott Walker. White, who's also received more than $25,000 in stimulus funds from the federal government, gave $15,000 to Walker's campaign. White is now being hit with charges once again after an investigation by concerned citizens discovered White may have contributed under a false alias. Catherine Quinn is one of the complainants in the case.
After the email came to light, we did do some research on him because, you know, it's usually part of a pattern. It's not, you know, a single incident. Did some research on him and his contributions and found this kind of error you will.
If White is found guilty, he could find himself losing his right to vote, as felons can't vote in Wisconsin.
You know, I don't know the specifics of what the actual punishment would be, but intentional contribution fraud is a felony charge. And so if he was charged with it, it would be a felony.
Quinn said it's important to remind millionaire CEOs that they aren't above the law.
I think the most important thing about this is that, you know, a lot of these CEOs, these really rich folks, they think that they live above the law. They don't have to follow the same rules that we do. And so we really want to draw attention to that and make sure that elections remain democratic in our state and across the country.
Many people are wondering what organized labor's plan will be after the election, no matter who is elected. On Friday, Workers Independent News asked that question of AFSCME's Lee Saunders.
Well, we're going to try to rest maybe a day. That's all that we can do. But we're going right into the lame duck session. There's going to be a big battle in Washington, D.C. regarding how we're going to spend our money, how we reduce the deficit, if we're going to raise taxes or we're going to cut very, very important programs that impact on working families. So we're going to jump right into that. And we're going to be fighting like never before. So our work is never done. We're going to enjoy, and I think it will be a victory. I know it's going to be a victory on November 6th, not only in Washington, D.C., but supporting politicians who should support working families in state and local governments in those elections and state legislatures and governor's races. We're going to have many victories across the country. We'll take a day of rest, but then after that, we're going to be right back on the streets fighting once again, supporting the issues that impact on working families.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
Let me say this as emphatically as I can. Who cares about Mitt Romney's tax returns? Secondly, I love the fact that the guy is rich. You got people who are trying to make it seem like being rich is bad.
People think being rich is bad.
Yeah, and I guess it isn't if you can afford to buy elections. And, you know, and I still want to see the tax returns. And I don't care. I'm small-minded. Call me whatever you want. Small-minded. I want to see them. Because now that with all this Delphi stuff coming out and all of this pipeline to China stuff, I really now want to see what's in those tax returns. And no one should vote for them until we do. And I know tomorrow's the big day, but... You know, at the end of this, way too many questions to put that guy in the White House. I don't know about you. If you watch TV over the weekend, though, and you knew nothing about what was going on with the election, you'd think that the Republicans were the grand saviors of Social Security and those evil Democrats. Those evil Democrats, well, they were going to steal from it. That's all I saw all weekend long. And, you know, at the end of it, nothing could be further from the truth. But, you know, hey, when you got all this money to spend, it is what it is. I've got Matt Cartwright on the line. He is running for the 17th Congressional District, Holden's old seat. Matt, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, think nothing of it. It's nice to be on the show again.
So, you know, like I said, you know, over the weekend, all I saw were these ads that, you know, well, Republicans, they want to save Social Security. And I keep going, yeah, by privatizing it, putting it in the hands of Wall Street. But the other flip side of it is, well, those Democrats, they're stealing $716 billion, and they all know Nancy Pelosi. Do you know Nancy Pelosi?
That's such an outrage. Those ads they're running about the $716 billion stolen out of Medicare. And the disappointing thing is that they know it's a lie. They know that that's coverage that's provided under the Affordable Care Act. And they're just playing games and, you know, they're treating the American public as if they're stupid. Well, people are not that. Your taxes go down under that tax plan. So it's a way for the very wealthy to reduce their taxes on the backs of nobody but the middle class.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Matt. I mean, we knew that back in the 90s when Steve Forbes tried to roll that out. We knew that from the past, and I look at someone like your opponent who, you know, just retreaded bad ideas from the past. Nothing original, nothing new. I mean, I looked at her website a little bit, you know, and it's, you know, full of platitudes and full of nonsense. Oh, we're going to repeal Obamacare, the evil tax. Yet she wants a 23% national sales tax. I'm going, well, explain to me how that's going to help. If anything, a 23% national sales tax would spiral us into a depression.
Well, that's the whole thing. Is you can't be taxing, you can't be raising taxes on the middle class right now, not when we have high unemployment. In Pennsylvania, in northeastern Pennsylvania, we have 10% unemployment. Now is not the time to raise tax on the middle class. But, you know, what you mentioned before about retreading ideas, I don't have a problem going back into the past for ideas, as long as they're not stupid ideas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I look at that. I mean, that was a bad idea then. It's a bad idea now. It's always going to be a bad idea. Because that 23% tax, you tack on state and local tax as well. Now you're talking almost, you're over 30% tax. You want to talk about a regressive tax that's going to kill the working people of not only this state, but this country. That idea is it. And I'm hoping, and I'm hoping that tomorrow you come out on top of this, because that is a bad idea no matter how you put it out.
Well, look, that's an idea that's so bad that if there's two or three people in Congress that support it, that's a lot. And even if, God forbid, Mitt Romney were to be elected president, he doesn't pay any attention to that because he recognizes it as an unfair burden on the middle class. But, you know, reaching back into the past for good ideas, what do we find? Well, we find Bill Clinton's tax plan. Bill Clinton, you remember, left us with a surplus.
Sure. And if you want to reach back in the past, let's go back to Eisenhower's tax plan.
Well, yeah, I mean, what we're talking about is we have to have a federal government that is responsible with money, and you have to do it in a balanced way. You can't just cut your way to prosperity. The way to do it is in a fair and balanced way. So, for example, I would say go back to the Bill Clinton tax rate for people making $1 million or more right away. And then as unemployment eases down, say below 6%, and you can bring the threshold level down to say 250,000 people making 250 or more pay the Bill Clinton tax rates, which were only about 4% more.
Right. Well,
and then, you know, when the economy is really, really going well, as I expect it will do within a couple of years, you know, the property values, everybody recognizes that the real estate prices bottomed out about a year ago, and that they're on a rebound now, and that is the best leading indicator that the economy is on its way back.
Right.
We also have to have fair trade policy, not just free trade. We've got to have fair trade, and we've got to have policies to take into account that reasonable tariffs should be levied on countries that don't have Fair Labor Standards Act and don't have OSHA and don't have EPA and don't have reasonable regulations. We can't be in a race to the bottom, Rick, and we can't throw our organized labor movement under the bus by having unfair trade agreements. We've got to bring American jobs back to this country with much fairer trade agreements, and we have to roll up our sleeves and be much better at the bargaining table with places like China and South America.
Yeah, I agree with you. Do you think what's going on in Ohio right now with Mitt Romney and his statements on Jeep outsourcing jobs to China, do you see that as a possible potential teaching moment like I do? Because, you know, I've been saying for the longest time what we need to be talking about is domestic manufacturing. You produce domestically. You sell domestically, like China's done. And I don't blame China for saying, hey, if you want to sell products in our country, you got to build them here. I don't blame them for saying that if they can get away with it. I'd like us to be able to do the same thing.
Well, that's all part and parcel of making America competitive again. We have to build our infrastructure. We have to invest in American education. We have to do all those things. And as far as Mitt Romney's statements about Jeep, well, since when did Mitt Romney let the facts get in the way of a good story?
Good point. But you said you used one of the conservative buzzwords there a moment ago. You said you want to make the U.S. more competitive. And if you listen to the Republicans talk about being more competitive, it's always how much cheaper can labor get, how much more exploitable can labor be, how can we destroy environmental protections and workplace protections so that we're down where the Chinese or where the Vietnamese or where some of these third world countries are now. So instead of pulling them up, they're pulling us down. When I hear my right-wing friends say that, you know, I go, well, is that the kind of country we want?
No, we absolutely not. We cannot sit still for engaging in a race to the bottom. Too many people gave their lives for the labor movement. Too many people dedicated their entire lives for reasonable environmental regulations. You know, we have a statue of John Mitchell right at the courthouse in Lackawanna County. He's a man that dedicated his life to the 40-hour work week, yep, the 8-hour day, and to getting children out of the mines. And you want to throw all that away just because China doesn't have reasonable regulations? I don't think so. We do not want to be engaged in a race to the bottom.
Yeah, but you know that's what's going to make us competitive, though, Matt. At least that's what Romney said. He wants to make the country a right to work nation. I hear a lot of the Republicans spewing that line. Well, you know, if the employer just had more power, and I love this idea. Oh, they need more flexibility, which is ridiculous, but they keep throwing that out there.
Well, here's the great irony. You know, when you do that, when you engage in a race to the bottom like that, you're hurting Chinese workers too. You're hurting Chinese children. Don't tell me they don't use children in the manufacturing process in China. They have fancy names for it, like bring your kid to work day.
Yeah.
but that's the last thing that we want to do. It's ironic. We're hurting China if we agree to lower our standards to meet theirs. What we need to do is encourage them, cajole them, and if necessary, put tariffs on them to get them to come up to reasonable regulations that protect people and families.
But Matt, Mitt Romney said he's going to label them. He's going to label them a currency manipulator day one.
Yeah, you keep pushing my buttons about Mitt Romney, don't you?
I mean, but you know, you listen to all the things that he says, but you go back through his past and you go back through the spawn of his loins, Bain Capital, and you look at all the things that he's done and you go, how can anybody take what comes out of his mouth seriously when you've got years of action to look at?
You know, that the thing that takes the cake is that he attacks the Affordable Care Act when he's the one that put it into place in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
You know, in the same breath, he talks about how proud he is of covering everybody in Massachusetts, and then he attacks the president for being some kind of a socialist.
So let me ask you, Matt Cartwright. Matt Cartwright, CartwrightCongress.com, the website he's running for the 17th Congressional District. You know, I feel fairly confident you're going to do well tomorrow. So the question that I have is, you know, in these last couple hours as you're pushing to get more people out, you know, what's the pitch? What are you telling you're going to do once you're in office? What's the direction you want to go take from there?
Well, it's for me, it's really the big three programs, Rick. It's, in addition to standing up for organized labor, and organized labor needs a champion in Congress because organized labor is under attack in this country, and we've talked about that. The big three programs that we have to keep our eye on the prize is Social Security. As you mentioned, the Republicans want to privatize it. If they had done that in the mid-2000s when they wanted to, look what would have happened to it.
Oh, yeah.
When the stock market lost half of its value in 2008. They want to take Medicare and turn it into a lousy voucher program so that, you know, to get the coverage you're used to, you have to lay out another $6,400 in cash every year. But as Bill Clinton likes to say, you have to do the math. A lot of people don't have that lying around. So what they're doing is building a plan based on money that doesn't even exist. And maybe worst of all, under the Paul Ryan budget, they cut veterans' benefits by 13%.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Now, I don't know about you, but I think it's flat-out wrong to turn our backs on the very people who stood up and risked their safety and even their lives for our freedom.
But, you know, here, Matt.
I won't have any part of it. I will fight for veterans' benefits. We have so many proud veterans here in northeastern Pennsylvania, and they deserve somebody down there in Washington fighting for them.
I'm with you, but you know what the Republicans are famous for? And they, you know, these people that they call heroes, they love to, you know, take pictures with them and give and have great photo ops. When it comes to actually taking care of the people that they call heroes, the people that they put up on that pedestal for the photo op, they usually fall very short and turn their back on them. You look at what happened after 9/11. There wasn't a Republican who passed up a photo op, but boy, when it came time to make sure that the ailments and the health concerns of those people that we called heroes, when those are to be addressed, boy, they sure turned their back quick. And the same thing with our veterans coming back. It's the exact same thing.
Well, you know what? I will say this. I don't think all Republicans are rotten guys. I think there's a lot of decency to be found in the Republican Party.
I'm hoping.
And I think it's just a matter of drawing them out. I'm very proud to tell you that I have a lot of moderate Republican friends who are supporting my campaign. And they see in me somebody who's willing to talk across the aisle and walk across the aisle and reach across the aisle and get the job done for America. You know, Congress's approval rating is like 7% right now. And it's because people are disgusted with the climate, you know, the toxic climate in Washington right now, and that's not how you want to be. You know, when you're down to 7% approval rating, you're down pretty much to friends and family, Rick.
That's true. And I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes piece last night, but, you know, again, another one of those moments. I wish you nothing but the best of luck. Once you are victorious, we want to have you back here often to talk about what's going on and to make sure that you get the support you need to get what we need passed and pushed through.
Well, I always enjoy talking to you, Rick.
It's always great talking to you. Matt Cartwright running for the 17th Congressional District. Make sure you get out and vote tomorrow. CartwrightCongress.com, the website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this.
I think about my grandpa.
If one thing is certain about this year's elections, it's that working families can't afford to sit on the sidelines. The stakes couldn't be higher for American workers. This election is about how we'll move our country forward. We know that can't happen without strengthening the middle class and making sure the wealthy are paying their fair share. And it can't happen without you. Be a voter. Stand up for candidates who stand up for working families. This message brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
As feared, our People's Democratic Authority has been dogged nearly to death by the hounds of money in this year's election go-round, thanks to the Supreme Court's reckless decree in the Citizens United case. That rank political power play by five black-robed partisans unleashed the big dogs of corporate money to bite democracy right in the butt, poisoning our elections with the venom of unlimited special interest cash. But there's also another little reported consequence of the malevolent Citizens United decision. It has unleashed mad dog corporate bosses to tell employees how to vote. Prior to that 2010 court ruling, top executives were barred by federal law from using corporate funds to instruct, induce, intimidate, or otherwise push workers to support particular candidates. No more. Having been given a legal pass, bosses are openly conscripting employees to be political troopers for corporate-backed candidates. For example, CEO David Siegel of Westgate Resorts, a major peddler of timeshare schemes, warned his 7,000-strong workforce against voting for Obama. To do so, he wrote in a letter to each of them, would, quote, threaten your job. Obama, Siegel declared, planned to raise taxes on multimillionaires like him, which would give him, quote, no choice but to reduce the size of this company. Likewise, Dave Robertson, president of the Koch brothers' industrial empire, notified 30,000 workers that they would suffer assorted ills if they helped re-elect Obama. Robertson even included a slate card of Koch-approved candidates for them to take into the polling booth. Ooh, how helpful. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, corporate chieftains say they're not making threats, just friendly suggestions on how to vote. Oh, sure. As we know, everyone is equal in the corporate hierarchy, and you're perfectly free to defy the guy who can fire you. Good luck with that. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The third agency of government, yeah. I would do away with the education, commerce, and let's see. I can't. The third one, I can't. Sorry. Oops.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So the Corbett folks have sent out another mailer. You got to love this. Supposed to be hitting homes tomorrow. And again, you know, it's this whole assault on voters. They have the big front picture. You know, if you want to vote, show it, with a picture of the ID. And on the back, you know, basically, yeah, you know, hey, under a new law, voters are required to show an acceptable photo ID with a valid expiration date. Hitting homes today, someone sent me a copy of theirs that they got in the mail today and is supposed to be coming today and tomorrow. And again, you know, you look at this and you go, man, at some point, don't you just go, we lost. We lost this round. Let people vote. The answer is no. I guess you give them credit, you know? I don't know. And, you know, you wonder why people look at our politicians with a jaundice eye. And I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes piece last night. You know, like we talked a moment ago, you know, in D.C., people are 7% approval rating Congress has got. People are disgusted. And you saw this interview on 60 Minutes with Steve Croft, who was the one reporter from 60 Minutes, sitting down with Harry Reid and with Mitch McConnell. And, you know, as they're sitting there, they're saying, oh, well, we're friends. And you could see these two guys hate each other. Granted, they look like brothers, two old white guys who really, I mean, look like they could have been brothers, fighting over the last piece of cake or something. But, you know, the reality is what's going on with the – and I blame more – McConnell than I blame Reid, but Reid's got some of it as well. It's all about the political game. But I think McConnell did say something that I kind of agreed with. And this is where the voters have to come out tomorrow and make these decisions. You have put people, you have put ideologues in charge of D.C. and in charge of the State House here. And if you fundamentally can't come to an agreement, what's the answer? Well, the answer is to get those people out of there. And maybe Coburn's right. Maybe the best thing that would happen is everyone gets thrown out. But you saw this 60 Minutes piece, and it was, you know, more of the same. They said, oh, this is historic. These two are going to sit down for the first ever interview. And, well, they didn't answer any questions. They don't trust each other, as Croft said. And like Croft said, he said, that's the problem. There's a great deal of mistrust between the parties, and they don't trust the other to follow through and continue on. And what I found interesting, if you watch the interview, and maybe it's just how it's cut, But even, you know, Steve Croft said they didn't look at each other at all during the interview. And they didn't address each other. Something seriously wrong. Something seriously wrong with our process. And, you know, they did bring up the filibuster. And maybe something's going to have to be done on that, because as long as, and I've been saying for the longest time, I want to see Mr. Smith go to Washington. I want to see pain and suffering. You want to filibuster a bill? You get your behind out on the floor and you hold the floor like they did back then. Instead of just saying, well, I put a hold on it and everything stops. You know, this secret stuff got to stop. And half the time, you don't even know which senator put a hold on it. I mean, wouldn't it be a little more entertaining to do? I mean, Bernie Sanders held the floor for, I think it was 8.5 or 10 hours or something, and actually talked about the issue. So when the next Senate convenes, maybe we look at changing the rules, where if you want to filibuster, you have to actually filibuster. You have to actually bring out the cots. And bring out the jugs so you can not leave the floor. Now, that would be something interesting to see. I'd like to see Harry and Mitch make it 24 hours on the floor without leaving to go to the bathroom. That would be entertaining. And you know what would happen? They'd stop. Because there are such big problems that need to be addressed. You know, and I look at our fact of the day from the Sloan Center at Boston University. The Sloan Center on Aging and Work. And, you know, I look at this and, you know, is it surprising? Not so much. Nearly two-thirds of private industry workers had access to some form of retirement plan, and 48% chose to participate in the retirement plan, according to their numbers. And the first thing you go is, well, okay, you know, the folks at the Age and Work Center there, the Sloan Center at Boston University, you know, okay, could it be a big part of it is that these folks don't have money? That, yeah, okay, they offer you a crummy 401k that has actually lowered your wages, because understand, the defined plans of the past used to be part of your wage package. So they took that away and said, oh, here's this 401k where if you take money out of your pocket and put it in, or now you have a retirement. It's nonsense. So they point out, and in their blog post, Kevin Cahill, PhD, and Gene Kovacs, PhD, one of the Sloan Center and one of this analysis group, they go through Social Security and they... And again, it's a fairly right-wing argument that there are no assets of the money used by Social Security. What they're saying is that, well, all this money's been spent. So the Social Security Trust Fund is broke because it's just the money has gone into the general treasury and it's been used for roads and bridges and it's been used for things. And I think that's one of the things everybody agrees with. You know, Alan Simpson, the Republican from Wyoming, said, you know, hey, it's all been spent. You know, roads and bridges, and let's not forget war. Let's not forget, you know, Star Wars. Let's not forget all of the Cold War spending. The difference is this belief, and this is what they're trying, these folks at the Sloan Center seem to be trying to put forth, is that none of this stuff is an asset, that it's just spending. And this is a very right-wing frame that, you know, well, we're taking this money, we're just, it, you know, it's just tied up in those treasury bills. It's just debt. It's gone. And, you know, I look at this and the argument I guess they're trying to make is that maybe we need to be investing in certain companies in Wall Street. They don't say that specifically, but they say, you know, the reality, what they're saying is, you know, the money that we've used just goes into the treasury and it's been used. Even though we're borrowing it, they're making the argument that, well, it's not invested. And I look at the fact that it is in treasury bonds. the safest investment on the planet. It's not in speculation. It's not in Wall Street. And the question is when you look at this, what they've come out, only 48% of the people who have access to some form of retirement actually are involved in it. Shouldn't we be talking about how we strengthen Social Security to make sure that the 52% who either can't afford to or don't have or are not investing in planning for retirement, that something is there at the end? I mean, isn't that what we should be talking about? I don't know. I just find it interesting, you know, as we've moved, and the argument here in the state is, well, you know what, we're going to move over to this defined contribution plan because, well, it's our ideology. Not because it's better, not because it's cheaper, not because it's going to provide better benefits, but because it's their bizarre ideology. Just the end of it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back and talk about the news with Victoria Jones. Stick around.
Today, how reindeer use ultraviolet light to survive harsh conditions in the Arctic.
Reindeer's ability to see into the ultraviolet makes food and predators easier to see in the twilight world of the Arctic. There, the sun is often low on the horizon, scattering light into shorter, bluer wavelengths, more toward the ultraviolet end of the spectrum.
Scientists followed a herd of reindeer with UV cameras in order to see what the reindeer saw. The scientists noticed what objects absorbed UV light and darkened against the bluish Arctic landscape. For example, they noticed that fur and urine show up well in ultraviolet light. That makes it easier for the reindeers to see their predators and competitors. Lichen is a favorite food of reindeer, and it also was easy to see in ultraviolet light.
The eyes of humans and almost all other mammals wouldn't let in the same quantity of UV light. That much UV would cause damage to your vision or snow blindness in a human, which is harmful but a reversible condition.
The question remains as to why UV light doesn't harm a reindeer's eyes. If scientists can learn how reindeer protect themselves, it might lead to treatments for UV damage to human eyes. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for the word reindeer. I'm Jorge Salazar.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science. We're at earthsky.org.
If one thing is certain about this year's elections, it's that working families can't afford to sit on the sidelines. The stakes couldn't be higher for American workers. This election is about how we'll move our country forward. We know that can't happen without strengthening the middle class and making sure the wealthy are paying their fair share. And it can't happen without you. Be a voter. Stand up for candidates who stand up for working families. This message brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
Life can be a challenge. Life can seem impossible. It's never easy when there's so much on the line. But you and I can make a difference.
The literary king, the master of the word. I miss Herman. I'm going to look back at this presidential race, and I'm going to look back to that time where Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs were doing their little dance, and it was so much fun, and I already miss it. I missed Herman right away. And the rest of them, Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich and the whole clan. It's Rick Santorum. I still love Rick's, you know, marriages, not a glass of water, a little bit. Strange, strange stuff. Anyway, today is going to be the big day at Sensata Technologies. All of those workers are going to lose their jobs. And you go, why is that important? Well, you know, you go and you look at Mitt Romney, the guy who birthed Bain Capital, the people who own Sensata Technology, who are right now moving their machines to China. The workers there at Sensata had to, if they wanted to get a severance package, had to train their replacements, their Chinese replacements. And I don't know if this is a bit of irony. I don't know if this is just a slap in the face. But to close it down today so that tomorrow when those folks go to the polls and cast their ballot, they can make their next stop at the unemployment office. Maybe this is setting the stage for the Romney economy in the event that Mittens wins. I don't know. Anyway, to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and around the country, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I'm not quite sure why Sensata picked today to shut down and lay off all of their employees with tomorrow being the big election. I'm not sure what the message there should be.
It's a funny day to pick.
I mean, you would think that they would at least wait until after it's over. Just a thought.
I would have thought.
Yeah, well. I loved Lindsey Graham's quote over the weekend. He said, if I hear anybody say it was because they're in full spin mode, because I think Romney's going to lose and they're in full spin mode. He goes, if I hear anybody say it was because Romney wasn't conservative enough, I'm going to go nuts, Lindsey Graham said. We're not losing 95% of the African American vote and 2/3 of the Hispanics and voters under 30 because we're not being hard ass enough. I think pretty apt statement.
You know, I mean, was he conservative? Was he moderate? What is he?
He's everything to everyone. He's Mitt.
He's every man.
He's Mitt 360.
Mitt 360, I like that.
He's all around every issue. He's got his hand and his mind. He's all around. He's on every side of everything. And did you see the great thing yesterday here in Pennsylvania? Over in Bucks County, where evidently people who wanted to leave, they were being held hostage.
Yes, I heard about this.
I love this because, look, I mean, they've tried to suppress the vote. They've got their T-twits out there trying to intimidate the vote. And if that doesn't work, we'll hold them hostage.
I thought this was fascinating, and it was cold.
But the other part of me goes, well, hold on, stupid. You don't go to an outside event dressed with a windbreaker, dressed for the cold.
Well, true, but even so, it's still not compulsory to stay.
If you're a Republican, it is. You better stay. You better follow the line.
Apparently so.
Well, do you remember the rally that they had in Ohio? In fact, in Bob Nay's district, where they had all the dirty-faced coal miners out there behind Mittens and Josh Mandel, where the CFO said it was mandatory that they be there, but no one was forced.
Right.
I go back again. They're being held hostage, but they weren't really held. They could have left if they really wanted to.
No, it was just mandatory. It wasn't compulsory.
And I guess, I had a couple people email me going, "Oh, you're lying to us. They weren't forced to be there." And I go, "Well, then you just give me your definition of the word mandatory."
Yeah, I know. It really.
Oh, but that's where Josh came out with his zinger of a line, coal. They think coal is a four-letter word. And I think that will stay with me for some time.
I think it's going to stay with you forever.
Because that guy wants to be a senator. So here we go. I mean, it won't be long. It'll be the polls here in Pennsylvania open 7 a.m. tomorrow. I'm going to be there bright and early to enjoy the entire process. What are you hearing as we come down to this final deadline?
What we're hearing is you hear about polls tightening in the final days. Well, the poll that's tightened in the final days is the Gallup poll.
Okay.
Which is the poll that had Romney galloping away, 5 percentage points, 6 percentage points. That's the one that's tightened.
Yeah, the one that they were wrong on from the beginning. Yeah, okay.
Right. Well, what's interesting about that is because all the other polls, or nearly all the other polls now have, because that now has Romney 1 point ahead, did have him 5 or 6 points ahead. All the other polls now have Obama 2, 1 point ahead, some 3 points ahead, but mostly in the 2 or the 1 point ahead. So if If Gallup now has Romney 1 point ahead, and all the others have Obama 1 or 2 points ahead, I think that tells you that even Gallup has Romney down.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of it, it's going to come down to, obviously, the votes and what happens with Sandy, and especially in Ohio with all the shenanigans going on there. And I guess the question is, you know, are we going to know tomorrow night, you know, by the time we're done here, are we going to have any idea who the president's going to be?
You know, I see a couple of scenarios. I see a scenario where Obama does well enough that he's in the 290, 200 region, 300 region, and it doesn't matter.
That's the hope. That's my hope, anyway.
Right. It doesn't matter. They can have lawsuits. They can play around and fool about and do all kinds of Ohio, Florida things forever with all those lawyers. And then I see the other scenario where John Husted becomes the Katherine Graham of 2012.
Katherine Harris.
I'm so sorry. Harris of 2012.
And the J. Kenneth Blackwell.
Yes, right.
And again, you know, I hope you're wrong. I hope that overwhelmingly the vote comes out and you know, we push back on, because to me, this whole thing with Jeep and the whole thing with the auto industry, every working person in this country should go, wait a second, none of that makes any sense. You're the guy who was on the front end of outsourcing these jobs. You're the guy who, that's how you made your money. And now you're saying that it's that guy over there who did it. I mean, we should be looking at this going, no more, done. You lose.
Well, there are some very, you know, solid decisions that people can make here, and there are records to be looked at.
Can you imagine that there's anyone at this point, and I guess I buy in with Jeff Greenfield's piece on if you're undecided, just stay the hell home. You know, are there any undecideds left? Or can
They think there are some undecideds left, and actually they think that is what a lot of them do. Is stay home.
They do
stay home.
And, you know, there's part of me that goes, maybe they should, because I don't know that at this point in the election, at this point, do I really want the fate of the nation based on somebody? I'm sorry. I'm just too deep into this. But do I want somebody who's going to go to the poll and go, let's flip a coin and see which way we're going to vote today?
Well, that was pretty scary stuff.
You know, the fate of the civilized world basically rests on a coin flip.
Yes.
And if you listen to Paul Ryan, it's the end of Western civilization values. It's the end.
And Judeo-Christian values.
Yeah, you know, I seem to remember back while reading about when George Washington was president and the Treaty of Tripoli, one of the definitive moments in our history where we addressed that Christian nation thing, where it said emphatically, we are not a Christian nation.
But apparently we are. He says, Mitt Romney and I understand the stakes. We understand the stakes of where this country is headed. We understand the stakes of our fundamental freedoms being on the line, like religious freedom, such as how they're being compromised in Obamacare.
Mm. And what about the religious freedom of, never mind. You just get to a point. I've gotten so many mailers from the Republicans because they only have really two talking points that I can see in my area. One is that Obama's stealing $716 billion and everybody's friends with Nancy Pelosi. And the other one is the illegal immigrant thing. The guy who's my congressman potentially could be Lou Barlotta, who, you know, his claim to fame is he's the guy who passed in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, that there won't be any immigrants here. But those are the two big issues that I see in my neighborhood. That's it. You know, we hate others. And, well, of course, Republicans are going to save Social Security.
So ours is all about the gambling. Those are our biggest. Ours is all about the gambling.
Okay.
In my district, that's all it is. Gambling.
And
let's gamble.
Yeah, I'm in favor of gambling. I'm all in favor of stupid people being parted with their money.
Well,
I'm all in favor of it. I'm all in favor of dumb people losing their money. As long as we use it for not enriching Sheldon Adelson so he can spend $100 million.
Well, that's the problem. The way this has been written, there's a loophole you could drive a Mack truck through so that it's actually not going to go to the education that they claim it's going to go to.
Are we surprised?
No.
I guess I should know better by now. I'm old enough. So tomorrow night, how do you think this is all going to, you know, how's the national media, how are they going to sort through all this stuff? Or is it just going to be more?
Well, this is quite interesting. There is something, this has actually worked out quite, there's something called a national election pool. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, and the Associated Press.
Okay.
They go into what's called a quarantine room.
Mm-hmm.
At an undisclosed location, they go in there at 11 a.m. Eastern tomorrow with no cell phone or internet access.
Okay.
And they start sifting through exit poll data provided by Edison Research. And then 6 hours later, staffers will be permitted to start sending data to their respective news organizations while additional exit polls, especially on the West Coast, keep coming in. So then they can start reporting after 5 p.m. on some general trends, like is the economy an issue, things like that. They're not permitted to publish or broadcast any information that suggests which way the state's leaning until its polls close.
Well, that sounds interesting. I mean, because I had pretty much thought we had written exit polling off since, you know, the last couple of elections have been so badly exit polled where, you know, you've got so many different people with so many different opinions. They used to be good. We used to figure this stuff out. But since 2000, it's been a little hanky.
Right, right. So now the AP has also told its staffers not to be very careful about retweeting what other news organizations tweet.
That's
in other words, don't be lemmings.
Yeah.
It's just because somebody else calls it. If we haven't called it, they say in this email, we haven't called it for a very good reason.
That kind of goes back to what my mother always said. You know, if your idiot friend's going to jump off a bridge, you're going to follow him.
That's exactly what the AP says.
Yeah.
We're not going to follow them. We're going to get it right.
Well,
we've got a history of getting it right.
Well, good for the AP. As long as they're not like Fox News, who I'm assuming Fox News at 7:30 a.m. will be calling the state for Romney and Tom Smith.
I have to say the truth. I actually don't know what Fox News are going to do because I'm actually not going to watch.
Okay. I can't not watch. It's like the train wreck.
I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean, I almost can't watch it certain times. And that, that doofus Kilmeade.
Yes, Kilmeade.
Who looks
yes.
like somebody who just needs, as my grandfather would say, a good slap to make a citizen out of him.
Yes.
You know, him saying, I think it was this morning, he said that, well, we need to intimidate voters to keep them in line.
Yes, but, I heard that. I heard about that.
And you go, well, wait a second. And even Napolitano, who's sitting there with him, going, well, that's actually a crime. It's actually against the law. And he's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I go back to this, a lot of those people just, and I think of my grandfather's generation often, because my grandfather was a big fan of, you know, every once in a while, you know, someone needs a good beating. And I look at a lot of these, a good beating would do them good. I think that would help our country.
That's an interesting perspective, my friend.
It is what it is. Victoria, it's always great talking with you, and I hope to talk to you. Where are you going to be tomorrow night?
I should be in the White House.
Well, we would hope to hear from you and hear what's going on tomorrow night as well.
Okay, thank you.
Victoria, thanks so much. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
A boy with a gun. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. And I announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
If one thing is certain about this year's elections, it's that working families can't afford to sit on the sidelines. The stakes couldn't be higher for American workers. This election is about how we will move our country forward. We know that can't happen without strengthening the middle class and making sure the wealthy are paying their fair share. And it can't happen without you. Be a voter. Stand up for candidates who stand up for working families. This message brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
AFSCME, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death, no one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, The Rick Smith Show.
I got to tell you, that would have been a great ticket. Palin Santorum, yep. There were so many possibilities. And, you know, now that we're coming down to the end tomorrow, the end of all of the insanity that has been the last 2 years, you know, to kind of look back and go, you know, it was enjoyable. It was comical. It was funny. But it was really sad. I mean, the reality is the ideology that they are pushing, the vision that they have for this country is destructive as hell. And, you know, you go back and you look at all of the insanity and you just go, is it possible that after seeing them on display for 2 years that people wouldn't just go nuts? Insane. No, go away. And, you know, I was talking with somebody the other day who said, you know, the best thing that ever happened to the Republicans, his belief was the best thing that happened to Republicans is the last 2 years, because we have been talking ad nauseum about what they want. We've been talking about taxes for 2 years, and the consensus has kind of been, well, we need lower taxes, because we've heard it time and time again. Well, lower taxes creates jobs. Even though no one can point to anything remotely close to a fact or an example of where that is true. At least not Republican style, which means more for the handful and less for you and me. Now, if you were to say, okay, we're going to cut taxes on the bottom, we're going to actually give more money to the people at the bottom, people who spend it, then I could see you creating enough demand that jobs would be created. But what they're pushing, failure. Absolute failure. And what's amazing to me, and while, you know, I understand where the person I was talking to was coming from, that, you know, we've been talking about their ideology for 2 years, and there's been no pushback other than from within their little world. It's been like a 2 year, it's been conservative fest. All of the insanity, all of the bad policy, it's what we've talked about. It's what's front and center. So the low information voter, the person who's just, gets bits and pieces, keeps hearing, well, tax cuts for big corporations is a good idea. And that's what they think. So it'll be interesting to see what happens Wednesday. Because I do plan on seeing the 2014 elections ramping up on Wednesday. And a push towards who's going to be the front runner for 2016. And there's part of me that goes, you know, I'm hoping someone says, you know, elections are 6 months out. That's it. And we're going to talk about publicly financed elections. Anyway, tomorrow, the big day, 7 hours away. Time to get in line. Time to have that 13 hours on the Tuesday that, well, you can change the state. You can change the nation. You can change the direction. And I say get out. Make sure you cast your vote. Because if you don't, you can't complain the day after tomorrow. Have a good one. We'll see you here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial.